389. I want to thank everybody on the committee for being here, and I acknowledge that while the House has had a lot of hearings on cougars, we in the Senate side haven't. So I apologize if this is rehashing some old ground for the House. I wanted to have the hearing where the department would come in and pitch their proposals, in essence. And I think that's the B6 amendments, but come and discuss the B6 amendments. And then I want to give essentially each side of this debate an opportunity to respond, maybe 20 or 30 minutes each or so. On the one hand, we haven't made made this open to the entire public because we didn't want 8 or 10 hours of angry people from all sides. But if there is somebody in the room that wants to testify, I want to make sure that everybody that's here to testify gets a chance to testify. And I would also like the committee members to know that, I mean, feel free to interject and ask questions as we move along, because I want this to be a useful hearing where everybody gets the information that they need. So feel free to do that. And are there any questions before we get started? Okay. Roy, do you want to come up and bring whoever you want to enlighten us about this?
We have a little PowerPoint presentation to share.
Okay.
With the committee. And it's not very long, but it's a good overview of cougar management and cougar research, both past and present, that I thought would be a good overview for the committee. And it will only take just about a few minutes if I could move into that, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, that'd be wonderful. Okay.
And for the record, Roy Ellicott, Deputy Director for the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. On my right, Mr. Ron Anglin, our Wildlife Division Administrator, and Ron will walk the committee through a short PowerPoint presentation on cougar management and research in the state of Oregon.
I'm just wondering whether we should dim the lights a little over there. Will everybody stay awake to do that?
Thank you.
Good evening, Chair Ringo, members of the committee. For the record, Ron Anglin, Wildlife Division Administrator. This evening I have a very brief presentation that will allow me to provide you a summary of two important programs. One is our basic management programs. It's very important to note that Oregon has been managing cougars under a cougar management plan since 1987. And then the second part of it would be to discuss our current ongoing research projects. The department models cougar population in Oregon. It's something that we developed in the late 80s. This model is based on a lot of different factors, some basic density that's been derived from some of our research projects in the early 80s, and estimates that a maximum population could exist within the state of approximately 8,000 cougars. We use survival and reproduction estimates from cats that we have had harvested both on damage and within the hunter harvest, and use those to help validate portions of the model.
Excuse me, Mr. Anglin, 8,000 cougar?
Yes.
That's your best estimate?
At this point in time under the current model, and that is just a modeled estimate, Chair Ringo.
That's not the current number. That's the population that we can maintain in the state.
That is what is estimated it would go to if unchecked.
Okay,
right now, we estimate there's a little over 5,000 cats actually within the state.
Thank you.
There are four key important dates to note on this modeled population. One is in 1967. Based on the concerns of hunters, the cougar population had dropped to extremely low levels. Hunters were very concerned that cougars were going to go extinct. They worked with the department and pushed the legislature very hard to have the cougar reclassified from a predator to a game animal. By doing that, it took away the discretion to kill a cougar on site, to use poisons to kill cougars, to trap cougars, and everything else, and provided specific protections under the game mammal statutes that the department implemented. In 1972, the president banned the use of most poisons for taking of predators, the most significant which was 1080, and that also had a significant impact on predator populations and those that preyed on other species, in that a lot of other animals were impacted by those poisons and it caused populations to be suppressed. Then, as already mentioned, in 1987, the department adopted its first cougar management plan. That was readopted and rewritten in 1993. And then in November of 1994, Measure 18 was passed. That was a ballot initiative that essentially banned the use of dogs for hunting cougars and dogs and bait for hunting bears. I think that there's a couple of other messages to take note of here, that since the department took over management of cougars in the late 60s, that the department has managed them in a very conservative fashion, that our hunting seasons pre-1994 or pre-Measure 18 were all by controlled hunt. We had a limited number of tags, and the seasons that we did offer, the controlled hunts that we did offer, were in direct response to increases in damage in particular areas. Harvest of cougars has occurred through two primary factors. One is damage take, and the other is hunter harvest. As you can see, since we've been tracking this fairly closely since the early 80s, our hunter and damage harvest was fairly constant through the 80s and into the early 90s. Keeping in mind, as I just stated, that as we saw increases in damage, we would design specific controlled hunts for those areas to try and solve damage by having hunters take calves before damage occurred. And we were showing that we were being successful with that. In 1994, Measure 18 passed. We could no longer use dogs as part of our hunter harvest, and that put a severe restriction in what we were able to do. In 1993, actually, we harvested about 180 cats during our hunter seasons. In 1994, there was only about a three-week season where dogs could be used after Measure 18 passed. We harvested a little over 100 cats. And in 1995, after Measure 18 passed, we only harvested 34 cats. So you can see that hunter harvest declined significantly after the passage of Measure 18 in 1994. Damage harvest remained fairly stable through that time. We had about 50 cougars a year killed on damage. That has all changed through time. As you saw earlier, the cougar population has continued to grow and expand. Our damage harvest has increased substantially. We now have about 120 cougars killed per year on damage. And our hunter harvest has also increased. This last year we had 256 cougars killed.
Excuse me, Mr. Anglin, could you explain damage harvest?
Damage is actually defined in statute, Chair Ringo. And it's in 498.012, and sets out specific criteria that landowners, if they are losing livestock or if there's a public nuisance, threats to human safety, things like that, that allow the taking of cougars without a permit by those landowners.
And can they use dogs?
Yes, they can use dogs. That was specifically allowed in Measure 18. That's in 498.164. And then the legislature also adopted in about 1999-2001 some specific human safety statutes in 498.166 that defined aggressive behavior by cougars and allowed or identified the conditions when cougars could be taken when they were threatening humans.
And they can they use dogs in those circumstances?
Yes, Chair Ringo, they can.
Thank you.
I have a question. Mr. Anglin, could you explain to him, the landowner what use of dogs means? I mean, not everybody has a dog or a certain specific kind of dog. Maybe you need to explain. Because use of dogs, everyone seems to think, well, the landowner can just use the dog. And I think you need to clarify that.
Chair Ringo and Representative Smith, you are correct. It does take a specific type of dog, a hound, that has been trained to follow cougars in particular and learns to tree those cats so that and hold them in a tree so that the person following the dogs can come up and take the cat. Since the passage of Measure 18, we've seen a marked decline in the number of people that own trained dogs for cougar hunting. We rely on Wildlife Services and their damage agents to assist us with that. Some of them have trained dogs now that we utilize. We also have a few private contractors that we will hire to act as our agents to work with us to go out on cougar complaints. And if the landowner knows any individuals that has dogs, that they can still use dogs to run bobcats, and if they know individuals that have dogs that that they feel can be successful in chasing the cougar down, they can use that individual. Now, under the damage statute, if a landowner is having damage problems on their property, say they lost a horse, they lost a cow, sheep, something like that, by statute, they are limited to using dogs only on their property. They are not allowed to leave their property with the use of dogs and to go on to adjoining property or to go on to public lands. On the flip side of that, the department, through its authority, does have the opportunity to go on to adjacent lands, provided we have permission to trespass from those adjacent landowners.
Question?
How big is the territory that most of these cougars occupy?
Chair Ringo, Senator Bates, our research indicates that in South Umpqua drainage down Jackson Creek, that male cougar will have a home range of about 200 square miles, and that a female will have a home range of anywhere between 40 and 70 square miles.
My point being that restricting these dogs to a property owner's property in most cases is makes pretty meaningless. Those cougars are moving pretty fast all the time, constantly. It's my limited knowledge of cougars. Is that correct?
Chair Ringo, Senator Bates, we have found that quite often that by the time you can get hounds out to the site, that the cat has actually moved off of the private landowner's own property and either onto adjacent property or onto public land. And unless the adjacent property owner is also suffering damage, then it would be impossible for those two landowners to work together to solve their problem.
Follow-up, Mr. Chair. Is it common for a cougar to make rounds through his territory and return to the same area every 10 to 15 days?
Chair Ringo, Senator Bates, they certainly do not stay in one spot within their territory the whole time. They do roam throughout their territory. How often they cycle through is very dependent on whether it's a male or whether it's a female. It also is dependent on whether there is a female that's in heat and there's a reason for the male to stay in the area. So it varies. You know, cougars are territorial, so it is to their advantage to actively roam their territory and defend that from the intrusion of other cats.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, may I?
You said that the this range of 200 square miles for a male was in the Umpqua area. What about the east side? Is it different than different vegetative types terrain?
Chair Ringo, Representative Burley, when we did our original Catherine Creek study in northeast Oregon outside of LeGrand, we did calculate some home range sizes. They were not as easily defined as what we have with the South Umpqua study. We are currently in the process of identifying home ranges on the two current research projects that are occurring both in northeast Oregon and in the North Umpqua, but we don't have enough data in at this point in time for me to be able to say it's X amount. We only have about one winter, well, two good winters of data on the collared cats, but it's just too early to say. My guess is that we will probably see similar type home range sizes. Could be a little bit less, but a lot will depend on how tolerant the females are of allowing other females to establish adjacent home ranges. We found that from the Jackson Creek project that a female will allow her kittens, her female kittens in particular, to set up a home range immediately adjacent and even partially overlapping her own home range, but that males will aggressively chase out all other males. So it's a little too early for me to say definitively in eastern Oregon what it's going to be, but it'll be in the same ballpark.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Damage complaints. I already explained what damage was and the damage statutes that we operate off under. I think that it's real important to notice or to note here that Measure 18 again was passed in 1994. We were already seeing a response or an increase in damage complaints starting in 1993. In 1993, actually, cougars became a real high-profile animal within the state. It's when the department reviewed and readopted its cougar management plan. It was we'd gone through an extreme amount of public testimony and public hearings around the state. We had a lot of public testimony occurring at our commission meetings and headquarters in Portland. A lot of protests occurred on both sides of the issue, and really elevated the status of cougars in the eye of the public at that point in time. And we started seeing an increase in cougar complaints at that time, but we also were seeing an increase as a result of the population continuing to climb. So since that time, you can see that damage complaints have increased significantly. And I'd like to point out that damage complaints, as I'm expressing them here, include not only livestock and pet damage, but also human safety. Prior to 1994, we really didn't keep track of human safety separate from damage. We didn't get a lot of damage complaints in any particular year. But since that time, and when complaints really started increasing, we determined that it was necessary to separate those out, so we do keep track of those separately today. It's averaged in the last few years between 700 and 900 complaints a year. That works out to between 2 and 3 complaints per day that we're receiving around the state. We have requested a couple of different times in the mid-90s general fund from the legislature and positions to do nothing but work on cougar damage complaints, specifically in southwestern Oregon in the Medford and Douglas County areas, which at the time was the mecca of cougar damage complaints and the cougar population within the state. We were unsuccessful in obtaining those funds or those positions to work on that. And what we found is that we could literally keep people working full-time in these high-profile areas, doing nothing but responding to damage complaints. And we quite frankly don't have the personnel to pull that off.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. When we talk about damage complaints, oftentimes that's, animals, livestock, and so on. Is there any compensation to any landowners for any of the damage that's done? And secondarily, when you go out on a damage complaint, who pays for the dogs and the tracker and all that kind of stuff? And do we have an estimate of how much it costs each time we do that?
Chair Ringo, Representative Roblin, there is no compensation fund for livestock or pets that are lost on damage as a result of cougar. There are no compensation funds at all in the state at this point in time. All costs associated with responding to damage complaints on cougar are paid for out of license dollars. So the hunter bears the burden of responding to all damage complaints. Whether the individual that's filed the complaint is a hunter or not, doesn't matter. We respond to those complaints. We take them seriously. As far as an estimate per complaint, I don't have anything off the top of my head. I do know that we do provide wildlife services with $90,000 of biennium and license dollars to help pay for their field agents so that they can respond in the participating counties to bear and cougar damage complaints on behalf of the department and serve as our agent doing that. And those are dollars on top of our own staff dollars.
Thank you, Senator Ringo. I just had a question for you, Ron. Maybe you could explain to me on the complaint issue, and I know we've had this in testimony before, and I've asked that before. When you received, you said 2 or 3 complaints a day. How many, you know, do you write down every complaint, or do you determine, does Fish and Wildlife determine what registers as a complaint?
Chair Ringo, Representative Smith. We will write down every complaint, but we have to ask the people that we're talking to some pretty specific questions to try and determine if it was in fact a cougar. You know, we frequently will ask them, you know, are there tracks? And yeah, there's tracks here. Well, can you see the toenails in the tracks? Yeah, toenails are in the tracks. That's a dog track. You know, that's not a cougar track. And you know, was there livestock attack? Was there pets attack? Something like that. And what's the nature of the injuries associated with that? Have you taken it to a vet or a vet come out and looked at it? If it's a dead animal and it's something that, you know, is fresh enough that we or our agent, Wildlife Services, can go out and respond and do a necropsy on the animal on site and try and determine if it's a cougar or not, we'll do that. It gets a little harder with human safety complaints because frequently people call up, I saw a cougar on my property, and okay, are you concerned about it? Well, I think so, but I'm not sure. versus I saw a cougar on my front porch, I went in the barn, and there was a cougar in my barn. And there's most of these we have to take on face value, that the person did see, in fact, see a cougar, and that they were, in fact, feeling threatened by that cat within the circumstances that they described to us. We're not going to sit there and tell somebody that you have no reason to be afraid, you shouldn't have been scared, because obviously the person was, they feel strong enough to call us about it, and we have to trust them that they're providing us with the accurate information.
A follow-up? Maybe I'm not getting my question answered, or maybe I just want the committee to know. So of the two or three complaints that you're getting every day, you make the decision whether that's a complaint, or you, every complaint is taken at face value?
Chair Ringel, Representative Smith, we begin at taking them at face value. After questioning the person if they've called in, after questioning them, or if we've gone out on site and investigated the site, we determine that it is not, in fact, a cougar, and it's not a damage complaint, we will not record that as a complaint.
Okay.
If we feel reasonably assured that it is a complaint, yes, we will record it.
Okay, thank you.
And if, upon investigation, we determine it's a bobcat or a coyote or a pack of dogs, we'll record it as a complaint, but in a different category.
Thank you. And the reason I ask that or say that is because I have many people call me who don't even call Fish and Wildlife, who have complaints, who have seen cougars, and they get the impression that people think they haven't seen them. You're not sure what you saw. You know, I think people know the difference when they call, so that's why I bring that up.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator
Knowles? Go ahead.
The other point I'd like to make, Chair Ringo, that is very important here is the department does not relocate cougars. We absolutely refuse to do that. If a cougar is, in fact, a damage threat or is a human safety threat, if we move it, it will still be a damage threat or a human safety threat. If that cougar, if it's behaving in those kind of a manners and we become involved in it, our sole goal at that point in time is to kill that cougar. And we cannot take the risk of moving a cougar someplace else and putting it in a situation where it will cause damage in a new location or will, in fact, potentially hurt somebody if it's a human safety risk. So we absolutely refuse to do that. We have taken cougars and tried to rehabilitate kittens that we have ended up with where a female has been orphaned. It has been extremely unsuccessful. We have found in all of those cases that the kittens, we put radio collars on them, they either die of starvation upon release, they end up getting killed by somebody hit on the road, or they end up getting killed on a damage complaint. They end up chasing chickens, people's goats, things like that. Some studies that were conducted in the Midwest where they actually tested the theory of we will take adult female and male cougars from their territories and we're going to move them 150 to 200 miles into unoccupied cougar territory and establish cougars in these new areas. And what they found was the cougars either starved to death in their new territory, they were killed on a damage complaint, they were killed by other cougars because there was, in fact, another cougar there and they didn't want a stranger in their territory, or in a couple of cases, they actually had cougars end up back at their original territories and where they were trapped from. So based on the research, based on our experience, we do not trap and transplant cougars, and especially when damage or human safety is concerned.
Mr. Chair? Question. Thank you, Mr. Chair. When you actually get a complaint on a cougar, how successful are you in tracking and killing that cougar?
Chair Ringo, Senator Bates, it depends. And I say it depends because it depends on how soon somebody notifies us that they've had a damage complaint or there's a human safety complaint. It depends on the weather conditions. And it depends on our access to somebody with trained dogs. If people wait for 3 or 4 days to notify us that they've lost, or the horse has been attacked, they've lost livestock, the chance of the scent still being in place is very slim, and our ability to successfully come in with dogs and track that cat and capture it is almost nil. We have also found in some cases, you know, you start getting into this time of the year and it starts getting warm fairly early in the morning and there's not a lot of humidity, that dogs' noses will swell up and they are not very successful in tracking scent and they will lose it very quickly and very easily. Likewise, if you wait a couple of days, and we're depending on the situation, if you have scattered private ownerships and we do not have permission to trespass onto those other properties, then the cougar leaves property A and goes on to property B. We have no permission to go onto that property. We can no longer follow the cat ourselves. Now, if it goes on to public land, Forest Service or BLM land, that's not a problem for us, and we can continue the chase. If conditions are correct, we can get somebody there quickly, and we have enough land that we can let the dogs work, we can be extremely successful in getting the calf that was the offending.
Senator Nelson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. On this damage to plan, one of the things I hear from my folks, particularly in Wallowa County, they're saying to me that that the damage actually is a lot to the wild animals. And in the old days, they used to have 12,000 hunting licenses for deer and elk and stuff like that. They're down to 4,000 now. To them, it's an economic development thing. And so, you know, that it's the damage they're causing to the wild animals, to the deer and the fawns and that sort of thing. And there's no way you could track that. But can you give me a comment on that?
Chair Ringo, Senator Nelson, if you can wait just a little bit, I'm going to provide you some information on that.
Okay, I can wait.
Thank you. Next, I'd like to go ahead and summarize for you real briefly the four research projects that we've conducted over the course of the last 15 years. We've had the oldest project is Catherine Creek in northeast Oregon that occurred in the late 80s and early 90s. The Jackson Creek project down out of Roseburg and Tiller on the South Umpqua that just concluded. And then our two ongoing projects, the Winnaha Sled Springs in northeast and the North Umpqua project in southwest Oregon. You can see they're pretty far apart from each other. The two western Oregon ones are located in the Cascades on two different river drainages of the Umpqua River system. And then the two in northeast Oregon are located in the Blue Mountains, actually not too far from each other. There are two key things that I think that are important to focus on that have come out of this research. One, that cougar densities are fairly variable, that we're seeing between 7 and 13 cougars per 100 square miles. In review of the literature and all the studies that have been conducted in the West, Oregon has some of the highest cougar densities that have been documented in the West in modern times since cougar research has been going on. I don't know that that's a distinction that we really wanted to have, but that's what our research is showing at this point in time. The other thing that we're showing, there's been a lot of speculation that, yes, cougars are impacting big game populations. No, cougars are not impacting big game populations. And, in fact, our research in northeast Oregon is showing that cougars are having a significant impact on elk calf survival. We have not looked at deer, but we would suspect that there could be an impact there. We've collared 165 elk calves on the northeast Winnaha Sled Springs project, and of those, 104 have died. 86 of those were due to predation. 72 of the predation were due to cougar, and 14 were due to bear, and 2 were due to a combination of bobcats and coyotes. So cougars are having an impact on that population within the study area. And we have very high densities of cougars within the study area. The original intent of the Northeast Oregon and Southwest projects was if we determined that predation was having an impact, that we were going to go in and remove cougars to evaluate the effect of removing cougars on elk calf survival. Unfortunately, there was we were using federal dollars on that project, and there was a lawsuit filed against the federal government to put a halt to the project. There was an injunction actually granted that on process stated the department could not use federal dollars to kill cougars as part of the project unless they went through an environmental impact statement. The department decided at the time not to do that, and we're still waiting on the feds, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, to determine if they are in fact going to appeal the decision to the Ninth Circuit Court.
When was the decision?
The decision was, I believe, in 2002, Chair Ringo. But the judge did not say that we could use or could not use state dollars for harvesting cougars as part of the research project. But we have not made a decision at this point in time to do that. The other thing from a research standpoint that the department has never done is to specifically look at cougar-human interactions associated with either rural or urban areas. And those are two key critical research components that the department has not looked at. We do have Washington is currently undergoing a similar type study on human safety, human-cougar interactions in eastern Washington. There are some other states that are looking at predation and removing cougars to evaluate impacts on prey populations, and it's too early at this point in time to give you an answer as to what those research studies are showing. That leads us to the bill that's in front of you today, the Be Engrossed bill that talks about research. And if this were to pass, the department would implement this, focusing on the two key areas that we have not researched up to this point in time. We would go ahead and move forward with removing cougars as part of the Northeast Oregon Project to evaluate the impacts on elk calf survival and answer that question definitively for those habitat types. And we would also look to institute a human safety, human-cougar interaction study in the Baker-LaGrand City areas, Baker City-LaGrand areas. And as part of that, we would attempt to collar as many cougars within the study area that we could capture, that we would aggressively investigate every damage complaint that is filed with the department to validate every damage complaint. We would take aggressive action against any cat that was causing damage or human safety concerns, and then we would evaluate the effects and impacts of those removals on the level of human safety damage complaints that we were receiving. That concludes our presentation, Chair Ringo, and I'd be happy to answer any further questions.
Thank you, Mr. Albuquerque. You're just here for the ride.
Okay, thank you.
Question that I had, Mr. Anglin, do you have a detailed summary of the studies that you intend to do if this bill passes? An analysis, a description of those studies?
Chair Ringo, we could probably provide you something very easily on the predation aspect because it was written into our original study plan that had gone through peer review and was approved by the Fish and Wildlife Service. We could come up with something for you on the other aspect, the human safety aspect of it. We have some rough ideas, and we could provide that for you. It'd probably take us a couple of days to pull that together definitively, though.
Okay. And the reason I ask is because some folks who have an interest in this issue have given me a list of about 14 questions about the study, how will it occur, who's going to do the hunting, under what circumstances, et cetera, et cetera. And I think rather than drilling you right now, it would make sense for you to just provide what information you can, and maybe we can follow up on that. Is that reasonable?
Certainly.
Okay. The other question I had, and maybe this is more for Senator Bates, but where are we going to get the money to do this?
It's not going to be K-12.
Good job.
The bill says $375,000.
Chair Ringo.
The amendment.
Chair Ringo, we can conduct the predation portion of the study using existing funds. We do not need any additional funds to do that. We already have the folks in place. We're already conducting the research. We just have to shift our focus a little bit, and the cost to us would be virtually nil. The other portion of it, the human safety portion of it, it would require $375,000 of biennium, and it probably would take about 3 years to do the work. By the time this would come out of here, we'd be into this winter before we could implement anybody, hire the couple of people that would be associated with it, and begin collaring cats. So to be able to provide you with an answer that was meaningful, we probably would be looking at the following legislative session, the 09 legislative session, to be able to provide you with any results. So we'd be looking at a combined total of 2 times $375,000.
How big an area would you expect for the human safety study?
Chair Ringo, what we would have to do is look at some of the preliminary results that I alluded to earlier on home ranges on the Wenaha Sled Springs area, and use those and kind of overlay them over the top of LeGrand and Baker City, and then draw a study area circle around those home ranges. I couldn't answer that specifically today, but we would focus on, in effect, the Grand Ronde Valley and the Baker Valley, and some of the foothill ranges around those communities.
And would you remove the animals for that study?
Chair Ringo, what we would do is we would go in utilizing dogs. We would capture every cougar that we could. If there were places where we felt that we could capture a cat utilizing snares or something like that, we would do that. We would put a radio collar on that cat, which means that we would now have radio collared cats in a situation where they could pose a human safety or a damage complaint. And people could get quite agitated if you knew this radio collared animal was in my yard. Why didn't you do something about it before it caused a problem? So you do need to be aware of that. But if we had a damage complaint or a human safety complaint, we would be able to go in immediately and look and see if it was one of the collared animals that was in the area. If it was, and we could tie it very easily to where the complaint occurred, we would go in and we would kill the collared animal and remove it from the area.
And for the predation study, that contemplates removing the animals?
Yes, that would kill cougars also, and we already have those study areas defined.
And how would they be killed? Would there be hunting tags issued?
Chair Ringo, what we would probably look to do is set a level of cougars that we wanted harvested out of the known population within the study area. We would attempt to use hunters and target hunters with the existing tag program that we have, which does not allow the use of dogs. We would attempt to use hunters to begin with to go in and remove those cats. And if we could reach our goal within the study area utilizing hunters, then we'd stop at that point in time. If we could not reach the goal utilizing hunters, then we would look to use dogs, whether we could contract with somebody to come in and assist us in treating specific cats and killing those cats. We'd have to look at that as the options.
Thank you. Senator Nelson?
Thank you, Chair. Yes, it looks to me like you've got a lot of information that you can make some conclusions on already without doing further study, and with sitting on Senator Bates' committee, $375,000 might be hard to get to. I mean, you already know that cougars are impacting big game populations. You know how the densities are. And you say you can measure the predation impacts without this extra money. I guess the thing I'm struggling with is, I mean, why can't we just go do something right now? I mean, because when we answer telephone calls and people are complaining to us, you know, we say, well, you know, we've got to talk to the Department of Fish and Wildlife, and it sounds to me like you've got enough information now that you can just go out and do some of these things.
Chair Ringo, Senator Nelson, the human safety aspect of this is a little bit problematic, because what we don't know is, in a given area where you have X amount of cougars, how many cougars do you have to remove from that area before your damage complaints and human safety complaints drop to a low enough level that they're tolerated by the local population of humans? There's not been very many studies conducted that have answered that question. Obviously, some people would say zero cougars is the level that you need to manage for. Others would say as many cougars as are available out there is okay, and you can't take any of them. So there's a lot of debate on both sides of this issue, and to be able to definitively answer questions that come at us, it's a little hard for us from a scientific standpoint unless we have some specific research to answer those questions. And the research projects that we've conducted up to this point in time have provided us with some excellent information and have tied in very nicely with research that's being conducted throughout the West, and are going to help us as we move into, and we're currently in the process of rewriting our cougar management plan. We'll have that in front of the commission for adoption in December of this year, and we're using those research results to dramatically change and improve our cougar management plan and the types of actions that we're going to take as an agency. However, we still have some unanswered questions out there, because there are still people that feel very strongly that, as you said, you already know that cougars eat elk, so just go kill cougars and your elk population will go up. There are other people that will say, you can kill cougars, but the elk population will not go up. It's due to other things. So until you go in and kill cougars and evaluate the impact on survival of those elk calves, it makes it very difficult from a scientific standpoint to definitively answer that question.
Mr. Fall, Mr. Chair? I can't remember the figures you said, but like there was 86 elk kills by cougars and 14 by bears or something. What were those figures again?
Chair Ringo, Senator Nelson, of the 104 mortalities, 86 were due to predation. 72 were due to cougars, and 14 were due to bears. The other two were bobcat and coyote.
Okay. Just to call on the show, it just seems to me that there's 86% or close to that there's predation out there. But I mean, why would you want to have to study anything more? I mean, you know that's having an effect on that particular area. And if you look at, I mean, the human safety thing is that's an important thing, but. You know, the complaints that I get from my district is that, our county's hurting. You know, we want to be able to go hunt those things. And the livestock is a secondary thing in a lot of respects to some of those people. I'm just kind of wondering about, spending $375,000 for another study. When it seems to me the facts are already there, that just go out and it may not tell you anything about the human safety factor, but you already know that there's this huge animal predation. And just to take care of that problem. So,
well, just okay. Any response or just?
I have a response.
You guys know more about it.
Senator Bates.
Yes. What was the normal expected survival of calves in the past when the population of cougars were smaller? Was there a larger survival than there is now?
Chair Ringo, Senator Bates, in a lot of portions of Northeast Oregon associated with the study area, we had anywhere at the end of the year between 51 and 65% survival of elk calves. Currently, we're running between 26 and 32.
So you had a dramatic decrease by 50% roughly of calf survival at this point.
Chair Ringo, Senator Bates, yes, we have. And it might also be important to note that as part of the research, we didn't just look at predation impacts. We also looked at nutrition to see if nutrition was actually causing low survival of these elk calves. And what we have discovered is that nutrition is not playing a role at all in survival of elk calves.
Are there other factors other than the cougar?
Chair Ringo, at this point in time, our research is telling us cougars are what are causing the population to decline and are holding the population down.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Smith?
Yes. What I want to say is we have done this on the House side last session and this session. And I know you want to get up to speed on this, but We've gone through this and gone through this. Another study is not what we need. What we need to do is take care of this problem before someone is hurt in this state. And that's what we're trying to do. And that's why we're trying to move these things forward. We had a hearing in Baker County where we spent hours. We went, traveled clear to Baker. They have a severe problem up there, not only with elk and deer predation, but sightings and statistics, and it was just amazing. And I think they're very convinced, Fish and Wildlife, that they have a problem. We have a problem in this state, and as a policymaker, we need to fix that problem. So I just wanted to get that on the record.
Representative Boquist.
Thank you, Senator. And for the record, and I gave you a copy of this previously, Senator, but I have copies for all the members. These are the 4 hours of testimony from House Bill 2759 and 2781. And I'll summarize that, if you would, Mr. Chair, and then get a comment from Fish and Wildlife. Because at that point in time, they supported a version of a bill that had a pilot study in five counties using dog hunting. In that testimony, Senator, they outlined that in 2004 quota for the state of Oregon was 562 cougars needed to be harvested, and that's, of course, based on their own studies and previous documentation. They met 44% of that goal with a 311 shortfall. And while I respectfully, I mean, look at their proposal to measure elk and mule populations, I think the record stands that they do quite an amount of research, and we established hunting goals in 55, 60, or 70 hunting units across the state already. And so, as Senator Nelson pointed out, this is not a human issue. This is something we have studied to death. We have seen the records that have been provided by Fish and Wildlife to us, and we're only meeting 44% of our present goals at this point, and that's without the human interface study. So we have a serious shortfall, and I guess, Senator, I'd just like Fish and Wildlife to counter as to, are those facts still correct that they gave us previously?
Chair Ringo, Representative Boquist, yes, they are.
I want to just ask kind of a series of questions that go back historically. And when you had the full range of management tools, which would include dogs and hunting, and we had a very low population, the hunters came and they asked to make this a game mammal. From that point on, you managed with all the tools, including dogs. And how were your quotas set, and how were your quotas met during that period of time before Battle Measure 18?
Chair Ringo, Representative Roebland. As I stated earlier, when we first started hunting cougars in the early 1970s, it was based on, at the local level, the number of damage complaints, at that time it's livestock, that we received. Where we received a high number of damage complaints, then we designed a specific controlled hunt to encompass that area and offered a limited number of tags based on what we thought were the number of cougars that could be harvested. So in the beginning, it was some trial and error. If damage complaints continued to rise within that hunt area or immediately adjacent to it, we would expand the hunt unit boundary and we would increase the number of tags. As damage complaints started to go up across the state, we continually increased the number of tags. And the way we managed, as an example, through the 80s, I was working out of the Roseburg office, and at that point in time, we were taking a significant number of cougars on damage every year. And we were having a lot of that occur down in the Umpqua Valleys. And the way we began managing that was to design specific hunts overlaying those damage areas, and then a more broad and general hunt that was up on the national forest, attempting to reduce the cougar population on public lands so that you did not get dispersal of juvenile males and females from their natal territories into new territories as they tried to establish their own ranges. And that did appear to work, that we were successful in, once we got ramped up, in reducing the number of damage complaints as cats quit moving down into the foothills because there were holes for them to stay up on public land.
And then Battle Measure 18 happened, and we continued. Had we established a number of cougar in your model that was sustainable in Oregon and we thought would keep the damage level down? I guess that's the next question.
Chair Ringo, Representative Roebland, no, we had not done that at that point in time. In the adoption of the 1993 Cougar Management Plan, we did not establish management objectives for cougar. We were still reacting to damage complaints, and I think we felt that we could, with tools that we had available to us in 1993, that we could manage cougar populations at the local level when we could aggressively go in and target specific animals. So we did not adopt management objectives at that point in time.
Have we now have, do we now have objectives that we say this is the number of cougars that would be sustainable in our state?
Chair Ringo, Representative Roebling, we are in the process of developing those for the cougar management plan that we will lay in front of the commission this fall and for their adoption this December. And until that time, we will not have a management objective specifically for cougar. What we are looking to do, though, is to have an interactive management objective of cougar populations in conjunction with deer and elk populations, so that we're looking at it from a bigger picture than just individual species management, but instead to look at it as more related predator-prey and what are the acceptable levels of all of those.
So how do we set the objectives for the quotas right now?
Chair Ringo, Representative Roebling. When the quota system was established in the spring of 1995, what staff did was took in front of our commission, here are the specific number of cougars that you would have to harvest in each one of these, or we would have to harvest in each one of these management zones to hold the population at the 1994 level.
Okay.
And the 1994 level was right around 3,000 cougars. And as has already been noted, we have very seldomly met the quota across the state, and the population has continued to grow pretty significantly.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Early in your presentation, you had mentioned that currently you estimate there's about 5,000 cougars in the state, and based on your modeled cougar population, you said that 8,000 is the estimated unchecked population. What do you mean by unchecked?
Chair Ringo, Representative Burley, all things considered, that's where the population would max itself out. It's called density dependence, and we estimate that based on prey populations, based on territory availability, and based on the cougar densities that we're aware of from our research, that the population level itself out at around 8,000 animals.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Well, given the increased trend in the population from when it became a big game animal status, and we're at 5,000 now, how long is it going to be before we're at this 8,000 level?
Chair Ringo, Representative Burley, it's a little difficult to predict because a lot of it is based on annual mortality rates, both natural and human-caused mortality rates of the young. It also, as you get closer to the top, you usually see a slower growth rate. And in fact, what we're starting to see is in the mid-90s, we were seeing some growth rates of 7-8%, but here recently we're seeing growth rates more in the terms of 3-4%. But we're talking about a lot of animals across the state, so 3-4% can be a significant number of calves. That will vary by area. That you could have an area of low cougar densities and the ability to grow more rapidly versus other areas where the density is higher and they would grow slower.
One last comment. Thank you. You know, it sounds to me like you've got a lot of information already. I think we've heard this earlier. And what concerns me is what is becoming an all too frequent occurrence now, where we read things in the press. Earlier this week, Seaside, Oregon. Last week, Troutdale. Vancouver, Washington, in residential areas. Polk County, they're having a lot of attacks. Lake County, they've had. Down around Lakeview now, they've had three complaints already this month in June with animals being attacked. And, you know, some people say, well, that's because we're moving into the cats' territory. But I would argue that it's quite the contrary. These cats, there's so many, they're moving into our territory.
And if you look at what's going on in the city of Bend alone, where we've had three cats in the city, and I'm talking on Pilot Butte, and we're talking about the one that killed the dog that was tied up in the backyard on West Hills, which is right by the community college campus, we're not moving into their territory. They're coming into ours. And I think, you know, the study on human safety, I think when somebody finally gets attacked, and we're going to be sitting around while we're studying the human safety aspect, I don't think that's a good position. That's not what I want to be in. I can't support that.
I just want to make a comment. I'm here to get information. You guys have had hours and hours and hours of hearings, and this may be, I know you want to vent frustration. That doesn't help me analyze this issue. It really doesn't. Frankly, I want to hear from these folks. I want to hear from the other folks that have an interest in this issue, the proponents and opponents on various sides. And I just need to say that. Senator Bates?
No, thanks. A couple quick questions. And a second, what you've just spoken to, I've had only former rancher in Southern Oregon. I've had a couple of up-close and personal situations with cougars, so I have some sympathy for those of you on the panel who have gone through this. Having said that, I still have some questions. Can you flip up your chart on your model of cougar population real quickly again? I have a question about that.
See if I can figure out how to make the computer wake up again.
Yeah, if you can't do it real quickly, it's okay, but I have a question about that modeling. And I'm assuming that, Mr. Chair, excuse me, I'm assuming the modeling you have is, you feel is reasonably accurate, not exact, but reasonably accurate.
Chair Ringo, Senator Bates, yes, we feel it is reasonably accurate. There's no way to definitively estimate the exact number of cougars.
I understand that. About every 5 years, we're adding 1,000 cougars to the population from 1973 forward, and that's just a rough estimate as you go through. And we should top out probably in the next 5 or 6 years. That if you're also correct with the carrying capacity for cougars in the state is around 8,000. So we're going to top out in the next 5 or 6 years. When hunting by dogs was banned, there was a slight uptick in the population size as far as how fast it was growing, but not very much. What intrigues me about that is, you ban hunting of cougars by dogs, and yet the population, it doesn't accelerate its growth very much. It continues the same curve that's been going on since 1973. If we determine that we want to reduce the population of cougars in the state, and we have to find a way of doing it, if we determine that, that's a big if, but if we do, or if we want to reduce the population of cougars in certain parts of the state, do you have any idea how we're going to do that? I mean, my question is, the last time we saw a reduction in cougar population in the state was back in 1963. We were doing things then we won't do now, poisoning being one of the major ones, putting cyanide out on meat that kills everything. So that was one of the major controls at that point, and guns that went off when a cougar went by or any other animal went by. So do you have any idea how you're going to try to pull that population back down if we determine that the optimum population of the state as far as human safety is concerned, as far as game is concerned, as far as animals concerned, how would you accomplish that? Because it looks to me like changing with dogs in or out doesn't make much difference. The population continues to go up.
Chair Ringo, Senator Bates, I think you also need to consider some history that I really didn't go into when describing this slide. Throughout the West, the cougar was treated as a predator, and every attempt was made to eliminate these cats starting back in the 1800s. And as wildlife managers, all of us are in pretty much uncharted territory since, in effect, the mid to late 60s, and that's throughout the West. And we have been learning as we go, if you will, on what works and what doesn't work relative to cougar management. It's easy to look back, but based on what was happening prior to the passage of Measure 18 in 1994, I was actually the staff biologist in charge of the cougar program at the time, and I was aggressively pushing our field staff to add controlled hunts to address cougar problems and a growing population. And we were in the process of ramping up to do that at that point in time. And unfortunately, we were not able to do that, and the populations continued to grow pretty much unchecked since that point in time. To answer your question as to how would we control the population or how would we bring it back to a lower level, obviously you have to do it by killing cougars in some manner. And based on past experience, the use of dogs is the most effective means of doing that, whether it's through the use of hunters using dogs or whether it's through the use of wildlife professionals using dogs to reduce the population.
Follow, Mr. Chair. What restrictions are there, other than using dogs, what restrictions are there on hunting cougar right now? Are there restrictions in time or restrictions of any type?
Chair Ringo, Senator Bates, we in effect have a statewide 10-month-long season. We do have 12-month-long season in all of southwestern, or most of southwestern Oregon, extending up into Lane County, where we've had a huge number of human safety complaints. We also protect females with spotted kittens so that we don't have hunters causing orphaning and stranding of kittens.
Mr. Chair, if you went to a year-round season and no limits of any type, would that significantly, other than using dogs, would that potentially lower the population or not? Or if you don't know, it's fine to say so.
Chair Ringo, Senator Bates, no, it would not. We offer all of eastern Oregon, all hunters have the ability to purchase 2 cougar tags and shoot 2 cougars, and we very seldomly have anybody that fills both tags. The chances of literally wandering through the woods and seeing a cougar while you have a gun in your hand and being able to harvest that cat are extremely slim because cats are very secretive.
Last question. Using predator calls is ineffective?
Chair Ringo, Senator Bates, it has proven to be effective in some situations. And we've had hunters relate to us several stories of calling in a cougar by themselves and not knowing the cougar was there until they turned around. It was literally right behind them and kind of scared them. And most of them now hunt in pairs when they're going out and calling cougars. But usually the ones that have been successful in doing that only do that in the wintertime when there's some snow on the ground or weather conditions are real favorable. And they usually try and locate tracks first and then go out and follow those tracks for a ways until they feel like they're getting semi-close to the cat and then set up and start calling.
Using bait?
Chair Ringo, Senator Bates, cougars don't respond to bait. They will only come back to their own kill,
okay.
And once their kill starts to spoil, they'll actually walk away from that. And bait was not banned with the passage of Measure 18 for the hunting of cougars. It was only banned for the hunting of bears.
So they're as picky as my cat at home.
Right. Chair Ringo, Senator Bates, I have no clue how picky your cat is.
You haven't met
me. Representative Boquist, last question, and then we'll move on.
Thank you, Senator. When's the last time you investigated a human safety complaint or an attack or a framed attack?
Chair Ringo, Senator Representative Boquist, we were out in Troutdale just a couple of weeks ago on the human safety complaint there. We've been involved in the one down in Lakeview. I actually have several news clips that I brought with me. We were involved in every one of them.
Follow up, Senator. Thank you. Have you investigated the one in Seaside?
Chair Ringo, Representative Boquist, we ourselves did not investigate that. State police did. If you'd like to have somebody from state police respond to that question, they are present.
Thank you. I appreciate your testimony. I would like a lot of detailed information on the proposed studies. And maybe if you could provide it to me and the other members of the committee, they would probably find that helpful. And then I would follow up with some specific questions just in a direct meeting. Okay? But thank you very much.
Thank you.
I would like that kid in the white T-shirt to come up and testify. and parents, too.
Yep.
That's okay,
no problem.
Especially if I'll
stay up
here.
Yeah.
It won't hurt you.
Yeah.
Just tell us what your name is and tell us what you're here to tell us.
My name is Andrew Weil and
we had to go through mountains to get here.
My name is Andrew Weil and
we just got off the road.
That's okay.
My name is Andrew Weil, and I came here because there's a meeting about the mountain lion incident with me, I think.
Andrew, why don't you tell us what happened?
Well, I turned a corner at my friend's house, in the back of his house, and the mountain lion jumped at me and dived on my leg and brushed my leg.
Can you translate that?
There. And do you have some scratches on you?
Yeah.
Okay. Can you show him? Where are they?
He didn't get scratches. Okay. They were marks.
Okay.
He didn't get bit. I want to make sure they
still. Okay.
They were practically scratches.
I mean, on a fair child.
Okay.
In all fairness, I don't think the cougar was attacking.
Okay. But ma'am, what's your name?
Alarmed. Lena Weil. I'm sorry. I'm his mother.
That's okay. Thank you. Anything else you want to tell us?
No, not really.
Okay.
Thank you, sir. Can you tell us where do you live out of the country? Are you in a wooded area, or do you have close neighbors?
It's a wood. There's a forest right in my backyard, so that's probably why it happened.
Oh, yeah. Hey, and you're from Seaside?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Was it a big cat?
Yeah, I'm sure it was.
How tall was he?
If it stands up on two legs, it'd probably be about the size of a doorway.
Okay. Do you have anything to add for you?
Actually, yes. I know a lot of people probably think that he's just merely making this up, but under the circumstances, we know it, there's no way. It's just not even a reason to be made up. And 2 hours prior to this cougar, there was a coyote sighting in the same area out of the same woods right behind our house, which my husband himself saw. And our neighbors had a bear just a couple days ago before that in his yard. So, I mean, these wild animals are coming in. So it's real plausible to me that he would have seen a cougar. Mm-hmm. And he has zero reason to fib about this. And he stuck to the story the whole way. And no part of the story has changed at all. So he's convinced me, for whatever it's worth. Yes. He was pretty scared, and he won't go out in the yard alone.
Okay.
So.
Mr. Weil?
Yeah, my name is Andrew Weil.
He was home when he come in saying I got attacked by a cougar. That's how he stated it at first. So
I almost lost another child at birth when he was really little. And when you think about losing another life when you come that close, it's really slaps you with reality.
Hey, Carol, it's all right.
I'm not a gun owner or a hunter. I've never have been. But when the population reaches this limit where it starts invading other people's territory because their territory isn't big enough anymore, then I think we're looking at needing to think about some other options other than study human safety. Like, was it Mr. Burley that said he doesn't want to be in the position of studying it when someone actually gets mauled? And
yeah, we don't want to wait till a child is mauled. Our neighbor's children won't go out. He won't go out. None of our other kids can go out. We have a big deck, fortunately, and we stay up on the deck with them now. And this is real. This is how we have to live now. Our dog, we have to bang a pan to make sure he's okay before he goes out. This is ridiculous. And Yeah, it's been a little bit traumatic knowing that he could have got mauled. And we know this does happen. So contrary to what anybody tells us, it could any time happen in our minds. I mean, you got to see our backyard. But our house is old. We're not new construction. That house has been there before that cougar was even thought of. So we've lived there about a year now, and we've never seen anything but some beautiful deer that lived in our area. We no longer see these deer. The deer have been gone for a while, and I think now we know why. So if that helps anybody know about deer populations, we're just kind of learning about all this ourselves. Okay. We just always thought the deer are cool. They eat our roses. We videotaped them. You know, they're neat. You know, all the neighbors like them, and they're gone. They're gone. Okay.
I just want to say thank you for making the trip here. I know.
It was worth it, though. It was worth it.
But I just want to tell the committee, we've heard testimony like this last session where a boy was attacked in Spokane, Washington.
We don't want this to happen.
And we don't want that to happen here. So thank you.
Thank you.
And thank God he's okay.
Okay.
All right. Well, thank you very much. Anything else from questions?
All right. Get your hug.
Well, thank you for coming. We're glad you're okay.
Yep.
And Paul Phillips, do you want to come up and, and bring whoever you want with you?
I think Judge
Brown is
there.
And that, what did you tell him?
No,
I don't have
a sign
up for this.
Yeah, they
do.
I think he's Judge Reynolds, are you there? Yeah, he's from Grant County.
Okay.
County okay. Commissioner from Grant County.
He testified at the Baker meeting.
Incidentally, I have a sign-up list with only three names on it, so if you're not on the list but you want to testify, then just let me know and we'll make sure you get to testify.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Rod Harder. I had not planned on testifying this evening, but thought perhaps I could give you just a little bit of insight as to what has happened previously over the years. I was involved with this, and I guess I'm to blame because I lost the election on the Bear and Cougar business, so take your best shot. But over the years, a couple things that they did not bring up here. One of the things that happened when we started to see this increase in cougars and tried to make some adjustments was that we lowered the price of the cougar tag from $50 to $10. Cougar tag is now also included in the sport pack license. So we have many, many more licenses out there than we've ever had previously. Another thing I think that, to answer Senator Bates' question, was that when we were hunting with dogs, the department was very, very conservative in the number of tags that they issued. So the success rate for people that were using dogs was very high. So if you went back to using dogs, that curve that is now very steep would very well taper off and come back towards the management objective that they were looking for. So that would be all I'd have, and I would certainly answer any questions if the committee had.
Thank you very much. Well, let's continue.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Paul Phillips. I represent the Safari Club International Chapters of Oregon, and I'll be brief because you can see me anytime. We would oppose the amendments as they stand because they don't do enough. We like the original bill that allows for local control. If you're looking at the issue when you see 56% of the quota being reached, that's a problem. When you see 70% predation on elk, where elk calves, I believe, are stronger than deer fawns, that's a major problem out there, and we've got a crisis in Oregon, and I encourage you to address it, as I know you're studying. We do think it's an issue for public safety, and with that, Mr. Chair, I believe we do need set areas where we do have used dogs as a management tool, because if we're going to manage wildlife, we actually have to manage wildlife, all of wildlife, as it works together. With that, I'd like to turn it over to the judge, because he traveled a great distance to be here. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Dennis Reynolds. I'm the Grant County Judge for the County of Grant here in Oregon. For those of you who are familiar with the nomenclature associated on the west side, it's equivalent to the Chairman of the Board of County Commissioners. I don't know any other way to share with you other than to give you a little bit of who I am and then explain to you my personal observations. They're not scientific in nature, but they're factual. I'm a professional forester, graduate of Oregon State University. Prior to getting into politics in 1995, I spent a lot of time doing road construction and logging. I was a general manager for Hutchville Sawmill Company in John Day, Oregon. And I share that only with you to make you aware of the fact that I spent a lot of time in the woods. Spent a lot of time early mornings, late nights, and I would have had an occasion recognizing that the cougar is a nocturnal animal. I'd have had an occasion to see these animals. Well, my first encounter was in 1962. I was 13 years old at the time. And that encounter was not a visual sighting, but that of a hair-raising event when a cougar screamed directly behind me while I was hunting off a favorite ridge in Fox Valley, Oregon. Since that incident, I saw no other cougars until 1996. And I've divided my testimony into three components. The things that I can tell you I personally have witnessed in an 11.7-mile stretch of road between my office and my home. Secondly, reports from trustworthy individuals, persons whom I personally would voucher for and am willing to share names if necessary. And thirdly, newspaper articles and recent Eastern Oregon events in downtown cities and municipalities. Since 1996, I've personally witnessed one cougar crossing the road about a mile south of Canyon City. My son and I, at the 7-mile post, witnessed a cougar crouching, having its concentration diverted off the edge of the road. It didn't move when we drove by. I personally witnessed a cat on a bridge at the 7.5-mile post on the crossing of Canyon Creek. It didn't move. It sat on there, and I was fearful that I would have run over its tail. It was that close. A mother and two kittens, quarter of a mile from our house, along again sighted from this particular road segment. On a ridge east of the courthouse, one afternoon coming out of a meeting, there was a cougar going up between the houses on a ridge on the east side of the courthouse, opposite the Training and Employment Consortium building. While this other incident I can personally testify to was not a witness seeing it, however, my folks purchased a relatively expensive trained cow dog from Haines, Oregon. Shortly after we moved to where we reside on County Road 65, about 11.7 miles south of John Day, this cow dog encountered what the veterinarian diagnosed as a cougar. He never was the dog that he once was. Trustworthy reports. A cat on a bridge near the museum in Canyon City, Oregon. A cat on the porch at a bus stop that the bus driver chose to go on up the road and come back and refused to let the students out until such time the cat had left the porch. A cat under the porch of a house directly adjacent to the old schoolhouse in Canyon City that was reported to have been subsequently removed from beneath the house by the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. There was a cat on the ridge east of Gibco Equipment Company, was reported by an elderly lady. You heard today here the unfortunate results of a lot of investigations. It was dry conditions, and she wasn't able to convince Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife that she had seen it. There was a cat reported walking outside the chain link fence at our secondary school, our elementary school called Humboldt. The youngster who reported it was interrogated to the extent that they became uncertain of exactly what they saw. Roughly 3 months later, a cat was killed three houses to the south of that schoolyard shot through this through the backyard screen by Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife officials and killed in the evening at night. There was a cat in the tree about 4 months ago, just one road over, approximately 100 yards, 120 yards from our mental health and health facility that's owned by Grant County in John Day. There was a cat witness coming down through Ace Hardware's yard and between Chester's Thriftway, the major grocery store in our community. A rather unique one I came across when an individual from Portland who was conversing with me at the conclusion of the wolf hearings in Troutdale gave reference to a witness cougar sighting that I later confirmed through photography by the neighbors. There's a relatively nice improvement in Grant County. It's a water feature created by S&C Electric, and it's right across from the Baptist Church. And at about 4 a.m. in the morning, this gentleman from Portland was traveling through the Prairie City area to archery hunt and witnessed the cougar drinking from this water feature. He thought it was a stuffed animal until it raised its head and looked at him. Another unique sighting, probably one that not too many people would see, and I don't profess to have seen it, but I do believe it in that my wife and my son witnessed it. It was probably about 6 months ago. It was still when it was relatively dark. They were coming off of 395 and turning onto County Road 65 and witnessed what they thought originally looked much like my older son's dog. But in reality, as they got closer, they discovered that this animal had dropped something from its mouth, and as they got closer to it and passed it, it bent down, picked it up, and took it up the hill with it, which was a domestic cat it had just killed. We now affectionately sometimes call those kittens on that corner cougar snacks. About a month ago, there was a deer in the driveway 3/4 of a mile to the south of our house that was chased into the fence. It tore the fence up. The landowner, Gina Carnigli in this case, noticed that the fence was in an array, drug across the fence, and found the kill that the cougar had killed, this large buck that was drug in underneath the brush just next to her driveway. There are incidences in other communities. It's not just John Day. Downtown Fossil about 3 years ago reported a cougar downtown. It was reported in the news media. Downtown Baker City, Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife killed a cougar from inside of a motel room that was in the back alley in downtown Baker City. Bend has already been reported by Representative Burley. We've made some other general observations, and that wasn't mentioned here today, but I would invite you to inquire of the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife what their porcupine population is. Trappers from Alaska, noteworthy individuals, Mr. Moore in our community, indicates that he believes that they're having a substantially adverse effect on the population of porcupines as well. As you well know, you've heard that Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife has determined that, yes, there's probably predation. And you also heard that there was a 7 to 8% exponential increase in populations. And I would only ask you to support the original writing of this bill because we need, for that student that sat in this chair right here, that's the reason we need action now. This cougar that was carrying that cat up that hill was 12 feet from my son's bus stop. My son anymore, we don't let him go out, but what he has a firearm with him, and he's only 13 years old. Now, why didn't we do something about those cougars? Every one of these cougars that I told you that I sighted personally, all would have been illegal to shoot them from the vantage point where I was because they're on the road. And that's a very minute piece of real estate in which you could see that many cougars. I share this with you to only show you, and I think it confirms what the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife is telling you in the records, the exponential increase in the cougar population. I think it's imperative that we act now before someone's life is threatened. It isn't a matter of if, it's a matter of when. and I much concur with Representative Burley from the standpoint I would hate to be in the state's shoes trying to rationalize why we didn't take action when we had an opportunity to. I'd like to add only one other comment, and that is we're here in 1994. What's it been? 11 years since this law went into effect, and we're now discussing the exponential increase in cougar populations. And if you read the articles from the state of Wisconsin, the cougars don't fear wolves either. Wolves in Wisconsin exponentially increased in population 14% per year since they were protected. So remember, predators are at the apex of the food chain, and the cougar is at the top now until wolves do eventually come into our community. Then the cougars only will fear the wolves. I thank you for this opportunity and very much would entertain any types of questions.
Thank you. Let's go ahead and
testify. Al Elkins, Oregon Hunters Association. We have chapters around the state. We have received Senator Ferrioli and ODFW Commission has received 200 petitions. I've been told I did not count them, but I have some in my office. Signed petitions from Grant County residents who say that cougars, there are far too many eating our dwindling deer numbers. Just a few sightings have recently documented 11 animals in various parts of Grant County. In the course of a year, these cats kill 572 deer or possibly more, and then there's more statistics too about the cougars. We have a strong desire to help protect the humans, but we also have a very strong desire to keep our deer and elk numbers up in Grant County, as these folks do, because of the economic impact. That concludes what I have to say.
Okay. Thank you very much. Questions for the panel? Representative Boquist.
Thank you, Senator, and actually a question for the judge and a practicality question. And I guess before I ask it, and I think Senator, you and I discussed, I think we had four or five county commissioners testify to us in a four-hour period, which is in the document already passed out. But I guess my specific question to the judge is under the original law, if there was a petition from electors in the county, would the county absorb the cost of an election to give them the option?
Chairman, Senator Ringo, Representative Boquist, I would say yes, very affirmatively. We would give them an opportunity for election. I'd also like to point out the fact that in the proposed sample counties, we are the counties who originally saw the wisdom in voting against the Cougar Bill in 1994. It did not carry in those five counties.
Thank you, Senator. Any other questions? Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Judge,
thanks for coming all the way from John Day.
You bet.
I appreciate that very much. Kelly Peterson, do you want to get Sally Mackler? Could I just see a show of hands? Who else is here to testify, I know from one side, in favor of we need to kill cougars? Who's here in favor of that side? Okay. Well, I just wanted to clarify that. Thank you. Stand down for a second.
How did things go in committee?
We're okay. Yeah.
Good evening, Senators and Representatives. My name is Scott Beckstead. I live in Waldport, Oregon, in Lincoln County. I am a practicing attorney there. I'm also the mayor of Waldport. By way of cougar experience, I ride my horse quite frequently through the territory of a very large male who comes through about every 2 years. When he's in the territory, my ride is always a little more interesting, but I've never had any problems, and we don't really have much of a cougar issue. I'm here today because I was one of the original authors of Measure 18. I was a director of the Oregon Bear and Cougar Coalition. I was a director of the campaign in 1994 to pass Measure 18. I was also a director of the campaign to defeat Measure 34 in 1996. I had pages and pages of comments to share with you, but what it comes down to is this. The voters of Oregon said that they never said that they didn't want cougars to be hunted. What the voters said was that the use of radio-collared dogs to chase cougars across large amounts of territory to be shot at point-blank range out of a tree was unacceptable on an ethical level. If there is a cougar problem, and I'm not convinced there is, because every time the issue of cougars and the problems that they may or may not present comes before the legislature or the voters, we hear all sorts of stories. Many of the stories of attacks are not credible. In April, a man was convicted of falsifying a report of a cougar attack that didn't happen. In 1994, in the News Times, there was a report of a cougar running wild through the streets of Newport in Lincoln County. ODFW, State Police, Lincoln County Sheriff, Newport City Cops, they all descended. The SWAT teams, I mean, it was a massive show of force. And what they found was a very large orange tabby sunning himself on a rock above someone's house. And I think the headline the next day was Tubby Tabby Terrorizes Town or something to that effect. The fact is that people who are motivated to hunt cougars with hounds are inclined to report anything that could possibly be a cougar as a cougar. And we've been through this before. The voters heard all these kinds of stories back in 1996, and they said with a resounding majority, no to the use of radio-collared hounds to hunt cougars. Now, if ODFW convinces the legislature that there is a cougar problem, tweak the season, enlarge the season, lower the fees, be creative, find a way to control the cougar population. Right now, more cougars are being killed than before Measure 18. Hunters are learning how to hunt cougars without the use of hounds. The voters never said, don't hunt cougars. They said, don't be unnecessarily cruel to cougars. It doesn't make sense to thwart the will of the voters when they have spoken twice. It doesn't respect the legitimacy of the democratic process. It doesn't respect the will of the voters. And it doesn't make sense to try and do that on a county-by-county basis. So I'm asking you to do what needs to be done if there is a problem. Make sure there's a problem first. But if there's a problem, solve the problem without going against what the voters have said. And they have said that they are not willing to allow unsportsmanlike and unacceptably cruel methods to be used. And chasing any animal with a pack of radio-collared hounds and shooting at point-blank from a tree, it's not fair and it's not warranted. Unless that particular animal has caused a problem, and then it's warranted. And when we wrote Measure 18, we wrote it so that hounds could be used to take out individual animals that were causing a problem. If, in fact, the police determined that this young man had some sort of experience with a cougar, that animal can be taken out with radio-collared hounds. But why wage war on an entire species in this state because of a few problem animals? So, that's my point. Thank you very much for listening, and I'll take any questions that you have.
Well, Mr. Beck said, I bet there's a lot of questions, but let me start with just a couple. I want to understand your specific objection. You think that using radio over dogs is unsportsmanlike and cruel.
Correct.
And what makes it cruel? I mean, as opposed to just generally hunting and killing an animal, what makes this as particularly cruel?
It's cruel to the cougars and it's cruel to the dogs. Cougars are pursued across vast areas until they finally either go up a tree or turn and fight. If they turn and fight, they and the dogs are going to be severely injured. If they go up into the tree, they have no means of escape. It violates the sense of ethics and fair play. I was raised a hunter. I hunted deer and elk in Idaho growing up as a kid, and my dad told me that, you know, you're supposed to give the animal a sporting chance. And the proponents of these kinds of measures to repeal Measure 18, either on a county-by-county basis or otherwise, they're trying to promote an industry, and they're trying to promote a behavior, an activity that the Oregon voters have judged to be intolerable, to be unethical. And they're doing it under the guise of public safety. And every time we have this debate, we hear the same kind of stories over and over about cougars in schoolyards and cougars on back porches, and there still has never been a confirmed attack by a cougar in the state of Oregon. And there certainly hasn't been anyone severely injured or killed in the state of Oregon by a cougar. I'm not saying it will never happen. It would be foolish for me to say it will never happen. But if it does, the animal that did it can be taken care of under Measure 18.
Mr. Beck said the testimony from ODF&W was that bait's not effective for cougar, that wandering through the woods is cougar because they're too hard, they're too secretive. I think the conclusion was if you have an overpopulation of cougar, that you're going to need dogs to remedy that. There's no other way.
Well, respectfully, Chairman Ringo, I don't think ODF&W have given all the alternatives a fair shot.
And what would those be then?
Well, one of the questions was, what if we had a year-round season? And the ODF&W official said it would have no effect. Well, how does he know? The last time there was, on the graph, the last time there was a year-round open season, cougars were nearly driven to extinction. So, I mean, I guess my question is, has ODF&W given those alternatives a fair shot?
Well, okay, one alternative, right now it's a 10-month season, I think they said. And okay,
12-month in our area.
Okay, 12-month in some areas. So one option is to change the length of the season, increase the length of the season. But what other options are there that we have reason to think might be effective in reducing cougar population?
Right now, Chairman Ringo, right now, hunters are killing more cougars than they were before Measure 18. My thinking is, and I am not a wildlife biologist, I'm not a cougar biologist, there are other people here who can talk to that, but my feeling is that hunters are getting better and better at killing cougars. It's always a dichotomy when you hear about, you know, on one hand you would think our state is swarming with cougars, on the other hand we're hearing how difficult they are to track and kill. I mean, we hear about them, you know, walking down the middle of Main Street, and yet we're hearing that they're so difficult to kill without dogs. It seems to me to be a bit of a contradiction. And quite frankly, to be perfectly honest, the voters have spoken on this particular issue. And it doesn't matter whether you live in downtown Portland or whether you live in John Day, the voters have said twice that the use of dogs to hunt hounds for sport is unacceptable. And that's why I'm here today, to try and preserve the will of the voters and to try and protect one species of wildlife from unethical hunting practices.
Yeah. Well, I mean, just a comment for me as somebody who lives in a cul-de-sac in Beaverton, I am sympathetic to people who come from John Day and have different issues in their community that those issues don't affect us. But questions from the committee?
No. Tom, I'm thinking, looking at the figures here, there's 72% or 70% of a calf kill. I mean, if you're talking about animals, to me, an overpopulation of cougars is very unfair and cruel to a small fawn or an elk calf or something like that. It really has no chance at all against these predators. So, I mean, I guess, you know, if you're talking about fairness and seeing a squealing animal trying to get away from a massive bulk that's going to kill it.
Senator Nelson, yes, yes, and I appreciate those comments. I was raised around animals. I was raised a hunter. I understand what you're saying. I believe, though, that a cougar filling its niche in the natural food chain is a lot different than someone putting radio collars on their dogs and then using telemetry to track a cougar through the woods. I think there's a big difference, certainly ethically, in those two scenarios.
Okay. Other questions?
I want to follow up on the same logic you had, Senator, if you would. There's 34,000 cougar tags a year.
in 2004, if the notes, interesting, are provided by your organizations to me, not by ODF&W, but their ODF&W numbers, we harvested 251 cougars total out of 34,000 cougar tags, and your suggestion by adding two more months were somehow going to increase at least to the present management levels, which are 562 in 2004. I mean, I don't see this as that helpful.
Representative Boquist, I'm not a biologist. I can't really speak to the biology. What I can speak to is the fact that I'm very well aware of the fact that of how the voters feel about using these issues, and my thought is that if there is indeed a problem statewide, then let's leave it to the voters and let's ask them again what they want to do.
Representative Roper.
Thank you, Chair. Speaking about the voters, if we look at the counties that didn't vote for either of those, there are a large number of counties and people who chose not to vote for either of those bills. In both cases, if you take, well, we have a little mess. If you look at ballot measure 18, the green counties did not vote for it. So the will of those people in those areas where we have found the greatest number of cougars was that this was not a good thing. So how do you grant them their rights or their right as a voter to try to find the population in their area as opposed to the whole state?
Thank you, Representative Roblin. If 2 years later, Measure 90 or Measure 34, if you take Multnomah, Clackamas, and Washington County out of the picture, Measure 34 would still have failed. So, and I guess my other thought to that is that it doesn't make sense to create a county by county patchwork design for wildlife management. I think that certainly there are counties that may not necessarily have voted for Measure 37 or Measure 36. And I guess the question is, are we going to allow individual counties to decide whether or not they're going to be controlled by those measures just because those counties didn't vote in favor of them? So, the wildlife, the wild animals of Oregon are owned by all of us.
I'll make the trade.
My point is that the wildlife of Oregon are owned by everybody, as much as by people in my town of Waldport, as in downtown Portland, as in Eugene or Baker or LeGrand or wherever, and we all have an equal say in how our wildlife is treated. I think that this is an argument that is pushed by an industry bent on returning to a sport that has been deemed barbaric, and they don't like the results of the 1994 vote. They certainly don't like the results of the 1996 vote, and I suspect we're going to keep having this argument until someday it's put before the voters again, and I think I know what the voters will say. So,
we'll follow up, Mr. West. Yes, Senator. Just to point out, we presently manage state wildlife, not just in counties, but in almost 100 different units across the state. So we always pretty manage to that. And I suppose, Senator, is a rebuttal, and you and I spoke about this before. This is my firsthand experience. So you can call me one of the hunters that supposedly wants to go hunt these. I had my chicken house ripped apart by a cougar, and it killed all the chickens. That's over in Dallas, Oregon. And I don't hunt. You can check. I don't get a fishing tag, hunting tag rarely. My neighbors within 2 miles in the last year have had 7 sheep killed by a cougar, and ODF&W tried to track it down. And you're right. No child's been killed yet. Now, I made a statement on the 24th. It's in the record of March, because I have a 9-year-old daughter that's crippled, and she walks in braces right now. She's at Shriners Hospital for surgery today. Now, on Mother's Day this year, these eyes right here looked at the pictures, talked to the people, and looked at the dog. 4 miles from my ranch in Wild County, where a cougar came over the fence and drug a dog away from a family barbecue with children running all over the place. I'm one of the supporters of this bill. I don't hunt. how to support them. Now, Senator, the whole ethical issue was raised here. I don't think it's ethical for any organization supporting any ballot to go out and hire people illegally, which is in a state and police report, to do things. To make me. So let's try to keep this civil. Because frankly, Senator, some of the testimony is quite marginal.
May I respond?
Sure.
Representative Boquist, I appreciate your comments. I am a father of four children, including a six-year-old and a three-year-old. As a parent, if I had an encounter with any sort of animal, I would take whatever force was necessary, use whatever means were necessary to protect my children. And all I can say is, if there are animals out there that are causing problems, those animals can and should be taken care of under the law. But I don't think that those individual problems are going to be solved by unleashing the hounds. I don't think it's going to have any impact at all. In fact, I think that the biologists will tell you it may actually have the adverse effect, because what you do is you take out the trophy hunters are only after the big males. And they take out the big males, and they're the ones that keep the rest of the population in check. The cougars that are most likely to come into population centers and cause problems are juveniles, who would otherwise be killed or controlled by the large dominant males. And the large dominant males are the ones that are being targeted. I mean, these houndsmen, they go out with their dogs, they get the scent of a cougar, they chase it across miles and miles of wilderness until it finally goes up a tree, but if it's a juvenile, they let it go. Well, that juvenile is the one that's most likely to cause a problem. If it's a great big dominant male that's old and stable and has lived a long life by staying away from people and only, you know, killing deer and elk, that's the one that's going to be taken out. And so there are some cougar biologists who will tell you that trophy hunting of cougars with hounds can actually worsen the problem.
Is there any of those biologists in the room?
I hope so, having just said all that, but I don't know.
Okay. Well, I would like to move on to other testimony if
sure.
You could, please.
Thank you very much.
Oh, I'm sorry, Senator.
No, will you leave?
Okay.
while we're waiting for this person,
Kelly, who do you want to testify next? Well, have them come up.
I kind of want to refocus some of this. This is, in my mind, not about trophy hunting or hunting of cougars. This is about public safety. And it's about the divide between rural and urban Oregon, and that's what we're trying to deal with here. I think that the people from the rural areas are feeling a very real danger from the situation of the large population of cougars we have. And the question is, in my mind, how big you want that population to be? If you make a decision the population should be smaller, how you achieve that smaller population? And quite frankly, I have not heard anything yet that would convince me that there's any way of controlling that population other than using dogs. And I'm waiting to hear something that would convince me otherwise.
No, you've heard a challenge, I think. Go ahead.
Thank you for the opportunity to address you today. My name is Sally Mackler. I'm representing the 23,000 members of the Sierra Club that reside in Oregon. And I would like to put to you the issue that we do live in a rural state, and as our population increases and as we move into more remote areas, we are going to see more conflicts. And
excuse me. Mm-hmm. We're going to take a five-minute recess. I have to go vote in the next room.
Oh,
sorry.
Sure.
I don't want to get more into your testimony and then cut it off. So we're going to recess for 5 minutes.
Holly, why don't you, you had introduced yourself. Where are you from?
I'm from Jackson County. I live in Applegate, a very rural area of Jackson County.
Okay. So give us your testimony, please.
Okay. As I started to say, we're lucky that we live in a rural state and that we have an abundance of wildlife. And we have to recognize that as our population, human population size grows, and as we develop more and more into remote areas, there are going to be more and more incidents of interaction between humans and wildlife, and that includes large predators. The issue before us at this point is, how do we balance, how do we create a balance between protecting wildlife and protecting public safety? And your committee at this point is being, is dealing with this very issue. And I'm suggesting that we need to look to science to come up with the answers to these questions that you have to deal with. And what I am hearing is a great interest in the Dash 5 Amendment, which is bringing back hounding, sport hounding, on a county-by-county basis. Now, Sierra Club is opposed to this, and we are opposed to it because science tells us that bringing back sport hounding is not going to impact public safety. That is something that I cannot stress strongly enough. What bringing back sport hounding will do is overturn the will of the people and bring back an ugly practice that the public decided they didn't want to see. Paul Beyer is the leading expert in cougar-human relations and interactions. And according to him, sport hounding will decrease the odds of attack from 1 in 25 million to 1 in 26 million. That's not much of a hedge.
Paul Beyer?
Dr. Paul Beyer, yes.
He's
the leading authority on cougar-human conflicts.
Where's he out of? Where does he live?
Most of his studies were done in California, but he lives in Arizona.
And he's on the phone?
Studied the larger. Can we get him on the phone?
Yeah.
If not him, we can get Rick Hopkins, who is another very well-known and well-researched biologist, cougar biologist. So we certainly can get him on the phone. But as Scott said before, some of the reasons why Dr. Beyer believes that that sport hounding will not reduce any conflict is because it may do more harm than good by removing dominant males, and we've already been over that. He also believes that in order to significantly reduce incidents between cougars and humans, you would have to remove 50 to 80% of the population. This is known. So I want to put that forward to you. And also a quote from Dr. Beyer says directly, sport hounding does not reduce the risk of attack. And I just want to keep bringing that to your attention, that bringing back sport hounding is not going to accomplish a wider margin of public safety for the public.
Ms. Mackler, you're reading from something. Do you have an excerpt of Dr. Beyer's analysis?
Yes,
or something you can
I do,
hand out?
And I have, all of you have that in your bill file. And I also have copies here for you.
Okay.
Which I can distribute now or later or whatever.
Thank you.
Thanks. There's also a paper from Rick Hopkins in there for your edification. Okay, the Dash 5 Amendment allows bringing back hounding on a county-by-county basis. It also brings back bear baiting. It goes hand in hand. Bears do not present a big public safety issue at all. And
yes?
I want to ask, you keep referring to the Dash 5 Amendment.
Mm-hmm.
That was defeated in the Senate, so we're not discussing. That's why we're having a conference committee. Am I correct?
Yes. I mean, I'm... For me, there's two purposes. One is I am learning about the cougar conflict that you guys have, I think, been immersed in hearing after hearing. And the other is just specifically, does it make sense to adopt the Dash 6s, which is the study? And if you have a position on the Dash 6s, what is that position and why?
Okay.
But frankly, I am interested in somewhat of the larger issues that you're mentioning.
Okay, well, then I'll continue because it does...
Go ahead.
It does relate to the fact that we have been talking about bringing back sport hounding. So whether we call it the Dash 5 Amendment or the concept of bringing back hounding to address the public safety issue, it seems to me to be the same thing. In any effect, in any case, we don't... There's not a problem with bears, so... That's one reason why we are opposed to the Dash 5 Amendment or the repeal of on a county-by-county basis.
Well, this hearing's about cougar.
Right. Okay. I'll skip, then, my concerns about the patchwork of inconsistent laws and that type of thing.
Thank you.
There have been a number of management changes that have dramatically increased the cougar kill numbers. Over 60% increase in kill numbers have occurred in just 5 years because of the liberalization of management techniques, which increased, including the hunting tags from several hundred to now over 34,000, increasing the season to almost 12 months of the year, to allowing double tags now in eastern Oregon. And increase in kill quotas have been consistent. Every year we've increased the kill quotas allowed in hunt zones throughout the state. And so my point being that if we were to bring back hound hunting, we would be looking at a much, much smaller increase in kill numbers here. And that's another point, that if you're wanting to remove more cougars, bringing back hound hunting for sport is not going to hold a candle to what has already been accomplished by liberalizing the management techniques that are in place right now. Best means of protecting public safety, according to scientists, is using education and prevention and not leaving kids unattended and bringing in vulnerable livestock. There's a quote from Dr. Beyer. In short, public safety is irrelevant to the decision whether or not to curtail or increase sport hunting. Risk of cougar attack can be reduced, and the risk of serious injury can be greatly reduced by a simple modification of human behavior. When in wild lands, do not travel alone, and specifically, and especially do not let children travel without an adult. So rather than increasing or bringing back hound hunting, I would suggest that we would do better to put our interests and money into looking at a system of education and prevention as a better means of providing protection to the public. Let me see here. Okay. Regarding the Dash 6 Amendment, I would have to say that the Sierra Club does not support further study of cougars. The state's been studying cougars for over 15 years, and it's still involved in studying that today. We don't know what the total amount is that has been spent, and I don't think that that was mentioned by ODF&W, but I'm sure it is in the multi-millions of dollars. I don't think that a study would appease the public either. I happen to have gone to a town hall meeting for the ODF&W budget in the biennium of 2003 to 2005, and the public made it extremely clear that they did not support spending funds on further cougar study. These were not people of my persuasion. They were people of every persuasion, including hunters from all over, and they also did not support this. I've included in your packet of information public comments reflecting that sentiment from meetings in Bend, Coos Bay, LeGrand, Medford, Newport, Portland, Roseburg, and Salem. These include very, very rural areas as well. So the general feeling is that money would have been better spent supporting the ODF&W budget shortfall and not being put into more projects. Additionally, one of the ODF&W budget directives was to decrease field projects for bears and cougars. It looks like the Dash 6 Amendment is going in the exact opposite direction. Costs we don't know about, but it was mentioned that $750,000 from the general fund would be allocated toward this. And we have a problem with that when students in Jackson County and others are sharing textbooks and funding for the disabled and elderly are slashed. I think we can find better uses for multi-million of dollars. Studies similar to those taking place here have been done in Washington, Utah, Wyoming, California, Colorado, New Mexico, and Arizona. So I think this is a topic that is being studied to death. If your real concern is public safety, I think that we already have very strong laws to deal with that. In many of the instances that I heard about, including the cougars in Bend that have been running amok, and a lot of these other instances, we have the ability to take these animals out. We may not be using that, but we have this ability. The one portion of the amendment that we can support is the looking to improve the systems, the system in place for documenting and logging cougar reports. And beyond that, we would suggest that in addition to that, there be implemented a system for responding to those reports. We would recommend that there be criteria established so that when these reports come in, they can be put into specific categories based on the criteria and on a sliding scale in terms of danger, and that the department then also have a system that dictates how they respond to these various categories, so that when somebody calls up and it is determined that this is a serious safety issue, we have a mechanism at hand and we know how to immediately respond to it, and we can put that into action as quickly as possible. And that is something that we can support, and we think it is well worth spending money on to do that. We don't have such a system right now. And we would recommend that portion of that amendment actually be put into play, and we would welcome discussions about how that might be best handled. I just want to make a very brief comment on the issue of complaints and how they are logged right now. The complaints come in and they are logged by ODF and W without very much criteria at all, and very, very few of these complaints are actually verified by somebody who has any background or expertise in the field. Somebody can call in and say, I saw a cougar last month when the moon was green, or the moon was blue, or the three-quarters moon, whatever, and it's logged as a complaint. And as a result of that, these numbers increase regularly. Right now, they're up to 700 to 900 complaints. If you look at those complaint numbers, you can see that the complaints were fairly low, and the year before Measure 18 was brought into play, they began to creep up dramatically. And complaints are very easily influenced by media and public input. And I think this incident that we've seen just recently in Seaside is a good example of that, in that ODF&W, NOSP, and Animal Control were called in on this incident and felt that there was not adequate evidence to warrant a really strong investigation at the time that the incident occurred. 1 week later, the night before this hearing, media picked up on this incident and it was blasted out all over the place. An investigation at that point was undertaken by the OSP. But at the time that this occurred, it did not appear to warrant serious consideration. And one of the reasons why that is because scientists have stated in studies, which I have included for you in your packets, that complaints that come in from the public cannot be considered reliable indicators of the presence of cougars. It's been found by studies that have been done by Dr. Beyer in follow-up, where he actually went into the field and followed up every complaint that came in. He found that 85% of the complaints that came in were, I don't want to call them bogus, but they were turned out not to be lions. They turned out to be golden retrievers. They turned out to be raccoons. They turned out to be any other animal that you can imagine, coyotes and anything else. So this is not a good way for us to be determining if we have a problem or if the cougar population has expanded. So that's another reason why we want to very much look into the way that complaints are being logged right now. This bill, SB 389, does offer that amendment, that part of the amendment, and we do support that. Several years ago, the Predator Defense Institute in Eugene examined reports complaint reports and found out that out of 645 sightings, only 20% of them were actually verified by a public official. So that is not very many, and we need to develop our system much better so that we can respond in a much more timely fashion to these types of complaints and tweeze out those that are serious and those that are not. I think that's about it for my testimony. If you have any questions, I'd be very happy to discuss them with you.
Okay, well, we'll have the other people in the panel.
Who's next?
Okay. I'm Noah Greenwald. I'm a conservation biologist with the Center for Biological Diversity. I received a master's degree in ecology from the University of Washington. I have a background in sampling wildlife populations and have reviewed literature on cougar management and ecology. So a number of issues have been raised today. As far as Dash 6 goes, that proposes at this point to study a study of the density of cougars. And as part of that study, it proposes killing cougars. And I just first want to point out that doesn't make any sense right from the get-go, because killing animals is generally not a standard sampling method for measuring their population density. The standard method for that is mark recapture. So the information you want is from recapturing animals that you captured once. So you capture an animal, either radio collar it or you mark it, and then you keep sampling and you spot that animal again and you get what's called a recapture probability. And that allows you through something called the Lincoln estimator to estimate population size. So it doesn't make sense to say that to have an amendment and say that you want to have a study of population density, but then include killing of animals in that study. That is a non sequitur right from the beginning. Similarly, ODFW made some comments earlier about a study in Northeast Oregon, I was asking some questions about that study in the back during your guys' recess, and it sounds like it's, you know, a good study that's ongoing, but I point out that the conclusions from that study are premature. They haven't been made yet. The study has not been peer-reviewed or published. Some information was left out in that presentation, which was that a number was listed for how many calves were being killed, but it wasn't reported on whether that's the limiting factor for the elk, and that's not something that's been determined at this point, if that's the key limiting factor for those elk populations, and that's important. I'm not sure what...
I mean, I asked if there were any other factors, and they said it didn't appear to be, that the only factor in the reducing pup-off, to them, the factor that was responsible for the reduction population was the cougar.
Well, this gentleman can jump in again, but the question here is that there's, in population trend, there's a few different variables, calf survival being one of them, adult survival being another one of them, amount of reproduction being the third. And typically what happens is you model all three of those things together to get population trend. And so what was reported is one thing, which was the calf mortality, and nothing was said about these other variables and whether those have been modeled to determine what population trend was. And when I asked, the answer was, I think that's being done, but it's not complete yet. So I think there was some misrepresentation, and it was purported that the conclusions were already made that this mortality is limiting elk populations. I think that at this point that's premature and it's unknown. If you want to correct me.
They may have rebuttal at the end, but keep going.
Okay. So I just wanted to point that out. I would secondly point out that, again, to study whether those elk populations are being limited by lions, you don't need to kill lions. You just study the elk population so you understand their population dynamics, and you can determine without a study whether removal of lions would influence those population dynamics. So concluding is that you don't need to kill lions to get at to answer the questions that are being purported as needing to be answered. And so I don't think that aspect of Dash 6 needs to be in there, and I can't see any reason for it to be in there except for that there's an interest in returning hound hunting or trophy hunting, and that shouldn't, I mean, if that's the reason, then that should be the stated reason, not for a study. So I would add to some of what Sally said about Dr. Beyer's work, and I think that's a great idea to contact Paul Beyer, because he's just a wealth of information. He's at Northern Arizona University. I'd be glad to call him and talk to him. I know Paul, and see if he'd be willing to testify in front of this conference, because he just understands this information, has a wealth of knowledge. He studied lions for years in Southern California, so he studied lions in an area of incredible population density of humans, and also a large number of lions. So he understands these interactions. He's also gone back and looked at all of the reports of lion attacks, and from 1890 to the present, he's identified only roughly 100 attacks. So this is an animal that does not regularly attack humans and does not pose a serious threat to humans. What I would say is that, we have to look at this within the context of our perceptions, that there's a whole history of fear around these animals, and these animals were persecuted massively for years because of a perceived fear of them, and they were poisoned, and they were, frankly killed by government agents. We purposely tried to exterminate them. We've stopped doing that now, and we've decided that that's not our values as a society. And his conclusions were, from looking at all these attacks, and from looking at studying lions in Southern California in this area of high human density, is that the chances of lions attacking people is incredibly slim, just doesn't generally happen, and that B, for us to reduce that risk, it's not effective to hunt with hounds. That we're not gonna affect public safety by going out and hunt and trophy hunting these animals. That we may affect public safety if we went back to wholesale persecution of these animals. But I think we as a society have determined that we're not going to do that.
Just a couple more minutes, because we've got several other people on this list.
Okay, great. I'm almost done.
Thank you.
The second thing I would say is, with elk populations, lions and elk, occurred for thousands of years together, and lions never wiped elk out. That hasn't ever been a concern, that lion populations were going to get so high that they were going to wipe elk populations out. And, this is one of the fundamental things that was studied in ecology very early on was predator-prey relationships. And it was very early on recognized that predator populations do not overpopulate and do not wipe out their prey populations, but that's not generally something that occurs. And I don't think that's something that's occurring here or is going to occur. And so I don't think it's necessary to kill lions to save elk, essentially. That's the end of my testimony there.
You wouldn't dispute that the lion population can influence elk population.
Sure, but whether it's influencing it in a negative way is another question. I think that would be hard to show. I mean, one of the things that they've typically found in ecological studies is that there's a carrying capacity for elk, and that lion populations keep those densities within range. I mean, if you look at the Northeast, for example, where I don't know if you've driven around the Northeast United States recently or read the news reports, but they have these huge deer populations. They're just way out of control. They're, in Minnesota as well, in the Midwest, they're, finding that they have to control deer populations. And so one of the reasons for that is that, lions were extirpated from most of the northeastern United States. And so we don't have predator populations. So in a sense, one of the things that they found from ecology is that these animals are serving an important ecological role. They're keeping these prey populations in check.
Okay. Thank you. Ma'am? Ma'am, what's your name?
Hello. My name is Catherine Kane, and I'm a retired teacher. I have a master's degree in science, and I'm the past director of the Northwest Cougar Action Trust.
How do you spell Kane?
Well, that's a long story. It's my ex-husband's name. It's K-O-E-H-N. It had an umlaut. I know it doesn't look like Kane, but...
K-O-E-H-N.
That's right. Catherine with a C.
And where are you from?
Well, I live in rural Lane County, and I raise llamas. And I'm very familiar with cougars and bears. They live right by me.
Okay. Thank you. Go ahead.
Okay. I have been studying the biological and political issues surrounding this for about 20 years, and I'm very concerned about public safety. As a teacher, I'm very concerned about any threats that cougars might pose to children. But I'm here today to ask you to please not allow Measure 18 to be taken down, because you will, in effect, be creating a public safety threat by destabilizing the cougar populations. And I would like to share some biologic facts with you and show you why it's safer to leave the cougars alone. Do you suppose that Representative Bocas will be back here?
Mm-hmm. Yes, but I would go ahead.
Right. Probably Mox Mix, huh? Okay, how to this occurs is because lions have a unique territorial response. All predators do. They're a self-regulating species. And the ecological structure of cats and their habitat is such that they are self-limiting. You can't have too many cougars. And I'm going to go a little Ross Perot on you, if I could just explain this, because it's a pretty important point. Remember, the ODFW said a male cat has 200 square miles of territory. So let's say the big circle here is the dominant male walking around. And how they structure themselves very cleverly for the big male is four or five, maybe, females are within the walking distance. They have about half the range of the cougar, the male cougar. But basically, this unit exists as a single unit. If you were to kill, if you want to increase public safety in Bend and you think it'll be increased by killing cougars, male cougars, which will be the one that'll come down there, then you'd have to kill actually all of the females that are there before there would be any decrease in the population. In fact, what it does is by killing the dominant male, it opens up that territory. And you ensure that a younger male is going to come in there. And those are the type of animals that cause the problems and come down around people. You can look at any news story. The cats are all a year and a half old when they kill them. And hunting actually lowers the age. And so by destabilizing the populations that now have been stable for over 10 years with the great success of Measure 18, as far as I'm concerned, you would actually be causing a public safety threat. And this is really like a wildlife tolerance issue. There's over 5 million dog bites every year, but we don't kill all the dogs. You already have provision in the bill for taking out individual problem cats that might come around people. We learn to need to learn to live with wildlife. What other states are doing is having educational outreaches to try and talk with the people and assess the damages and try and control the fear that the people have. And usually the ODFW does a pretty good job by telling it straight, the individual field folks. But there is no conclusive evidence to support your unscientific assumption. And I guarantee you it will cause a public safety threat. A little later, I'll refer to something Mr. Englund said about the particular study that Mr. Johnson did in Northeast Oregon. But there's another researcher, Rick Hopkins, that they were mentioning, and his quote is that sightings are not a good indicator of potential attacks. Yes, there probably are more sightings, but it's natural. We almost exterminated the entire population of cougars by 1960. There's been a steady increase in cougars, and the reason why this little diagram is important is male cats walking 200 miles in a night with the five females around him. There are only so many ecological niches that we have in this state, so many deer, that can fit within the parameter of this. You can't have too many cougars. They are self-regulating, and the number of deer is what regulates them. Maurice Hornacker years ago showed that ungulate populations are not controlled by the predators. And Because this is the history of this amendment originated in northeastern Oregon, I'm going to give you a little bit about something that I know a lot about, and that's a study that I would like to propose for you about closing roads. If you are interested in improving elk reproduction and hunting opportunities, you should enforce the already existing agreement that you have with the national forest out there and close roads, really close roads. No fakey berms that ORVs can rumble over into the wilderness. Another thing that's important has to do with the biology of the elk budget. They have a limited elk energy budget. And I'd like to predicate this by saying that a biologist on the Forest Service that I talked to directly told me that, pertaining to elk harassment, an elk is a strange kind of animal. If you scare it, because they have had collars on them, they can see that these animals actually can run up to 5 miles if they're scared by noises or cars or roads or whatever. So elk harassment is directly proportional in the Wallawas to the same 40-year period that road building went on. If you look, there's a directly inverse relationship. The number of roads goes up, the number of elks goes down for 40 years. And Senator Ringo asked about other exacerbating factors. Well, we happen to be in the middle of what's called a super drought in the whole Northwest, but especially bad in northeastern Oregon and Idaho area. And what happens, and that's a nutritional thing, the elk can only go according to how much good feed they get. If they have good food, they might be able to have a baby.
Mrs. King, just a couple more minutes, please.
All right, well, there's basically, I would like to propose a nice, cheap study and not cost $1 million. Just enforce the road closures that you already have said you would enclose out there where that problem is, and what the real cause needs to be a stabilization of the OSP Wildlife Troopers budget such that they are unhooked from ODFW and have a regular, secure source of funding. All right, I'd also like to say that I just want to refute real quick what Engman said, which is I can also give you another study that had to do with overflights of helicopters in northeastern Oregon. And his quote was, you cannot definitively pin down the declines of elks on cougars. So anyhow, there's another biologist, Doug Updike, that said it much clearer. If cougars had any desire to eat people, then we would have hundreds of deaths every year. They're perfectly capable of it. We are not on the menu, to quote the biologist. I think this is just a backdoor attempt to reinstate trophy hunting. Please do not allow special interest to sway you with emotional arguments, because our panel represents the majority of Oregonians. We would like you to conduct wildlife policy in a sound, biologically reasonable a manner, instead of making a mockery of our initiative system, or there will be a political price to be paid. I'd like to summarize by saying this bill is biologically indefensible, ethically reprehensible, economically crazy, political dynamite. And if you want to exacerbate the rural-urban divide, then just pass this bill. Instead, I'm urging you to please protect public safety. There have been no attacks. Science tells us this will not stop attacks. In fact, the bottom line is, if you want to end all...
Excuse me, if you could wrap it up and just...
I'm at my bottom line, sir.
Thank you.
The bottom line is, if you really wanted total safety here, you would have to kill every cougar in this state, and the citizens of this state will not stand for any more wholesale slaughter. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions for this panel? Thank you very much. Barbara Wilson and Amy Atwood? Okay, you're not on the list, but that's okay.
I thought I was.
That's fine. So, Barbara, are you Amy Atwood?
I am.
Okay, good.
I'm at...
I don't care who goes first.
Certainly. So far away from.
Okay.
Certainly.
Yes, go for it.
Do you want this?
Yes. Is there anybody else here who wants to testify? Okay. And then, so this will wrap it up, and then
depending on what folks on the panel want to do. If you want to call up ODF&W just for more, do you want to call it quits? We can figure it out then. But go ahead.
Thanks. My name is Brenna Bell. I currently live in Portland, but for Cougar Credibility, for 2.5 years I lived on a rural farm in southern Oregon in the Siskiyous, and cougars were frequent visitors to our farm. We put all our livestock in at night and considered it mostly a gift to see the cougars. I'm here because over 3 years ago I was one of the attorneys on the case that Mr. Englin discussed. I represented a coalition of 9 environmental and animal protection groups, including some individual hunter plaintiffs and hunter interests, bringing a lawsuit against the ODF&W study that Mr. Englin referred to that was funded in part by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. As there are many similarities between the predation study and the proposed amendment, I'm just going to give a quick recap of that study and the subsequent litigation to shed a little bit of light on the wisdom of moving forward with the proposed amendment. I note that we...
Excuse me one second. Okay. I just want to kind of put some bounds on this because my hope was that we'd have the hearing done in about an hour and a half.
Me too.
That's what I told everybody.
Yeah.
And, you know, we took the first group, that went for an hour, and then we had a delay, and then we had a recess, so it's not your fault. But my hope is to finish in about 10 minutes.
All right.
And that means all three of you, okay?
I'll go quick.
So just gauge that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Then I'll speak rapid, and please slow me down if I'm not making sense. I note that this testimony has kind of diverged from the original point of the amendments and is more discussing the general approach to cougar management and whether or not we should curb the amount of cougar population and how much. But I'd like to just step back a little bit and discuss what would happen if the amendment -6 goes forward as planned. And one of the things that ODF&W wants to do is complete the lethal portion of the study, which we stopped in court. And as an attorney to that, I was party to reading several hundred, probably about 500 comments that the public wrote about the study when it went forward originally. And after reading those, it was clear that about 80-85% of all of the comments were opposed to using lethal measures in a study. Now, there are many reasons. There were the ethical considerations that people in the state feel very, very strongly about not killing cougars, as we've seen through multiple elections. There are also or initiatives. There are also scientific reasons that have been discussed that killing cougars is not good science, especially when the amendment discusses doing a density study. And the study that ODF&W is talking about is actually a predation study. So it doesn't really fit with the language of the amendment. But what was clear was the public was overwhelmingly against the study as planned. And not only was the public and public comments overwhelmingly against it, but I have with me a stack of editorials that came from all over the state, including 2 from the Medford Mail Tribune and 1 from the Grants Pass Daily Courier in Southwest Oregon, which are the areas where there are the highest density of cougar sightings. And all 3 editorials came out strongly opposed to using lethal control in doing the cougar study. The people there feel that the state is already equipped with the tools that it needs to manage cougars. As you've seen, the cougar hunt has increased since Measure 18, and there is nothing currently stopping the state legally from using hounds to hunt in, it's very broad, the state can use hounds to hunt in its official capacity. That's very broad, and it's up to ODF&W to determine what its official capacity is. Even beyond that, the measure specifically allows them to hunt with hounds for damage control. So the amendment doesn't really give the state anything that it didn't already have, except for possibly going forward with a study that was found in federal court to not have enough information. We filed the lawsuit, and in October of 2002, Federal Magistrate Judge Hubel found that the study could not go forward because the environmental analysis was flawed and incomplete, and that killing cougars as a part of the study could have significant deleterious environmental impacts, and that they could not go forward unless they did more study. So now this amendment is circumventing that ruling and allowing people to go, allowing ODF&W to go forward with a study that was clearly against public interest. And I just want to clarify, Mr. Englin stated that Fish and Wildlife Service was still deciding whether to appeal, and actually the time to appeal is long past. This was in 2002 that we had the lawsuit, and they decided not to appeal. And ODFMW has gone forward and done a very seemingly good study about predation without having to kill cougars. I want to keep it short, so I'll just note that this proposed amendment discusses a density study. And if the state really wants to put money towards studying density, that may be a good thing. It's obvious that we have a high density of cougars. People differ on whether or not they think that's a good thing or a bad thing for the state. I think we're blessed to have a high number of cougars. But ODFMW is trying to subvert the very language of the amendment and move forward with a study that has already been found illegal and is against the will of the population and the public.
Well, it was found to be illegal, the explanation was, because they were using federal dollars and that required them to meet some certain requirements.
The requirements...
So it was illegal in that sense. It doesn't mean it's a bad idea.
What the judge said was that there was not enough information, and that was a federal statute, but he said there was not enough information to determine what the impact would be, and from the information that they did have, it suggested that the impact would be far worse than the agency was owning up to. So while it's not... The methodology isn't illegal, the amount of information there was severely lacking.
Okay.
And so that has not changed and still applies to this. I just, in conclusion, want to just encourage you to keep perspective. You know, I'm a parent as well, and I think the most dangerous thing I do any day is put my daughter in a car, because many, many more children are killed in car accidents. And I'm a bicyclist, and you know, putting myself in the line of traffic every day is very dangerous. The chances of getting killed by a cougar are 1 in 26 million. If the cougars were going to start eating us, they probably already would have. We have limited amount of state time and state budgets, and I really encourage you to keep perspective. We need to learn how to live with the other critters in the state and put our time and energy into things that are really, really pressing.
Okay.
So, thank
you very much.
Any questions? Or?
Is that one?
Yeah. I have two short points. I'll talk to you. I address you first as a fourth generation Oregonian, secondly as an environmental attorney. I've grown up all over the state. I've lived in Dallas. I've lived in the Dalles. I've lived in Beaverton and Astoria, and spent much of my childhood in Eugene. My family has... I've visited grandparents and stayed with them for extended periods of time, and sisters, and in Eddyville and Gladstone. I feel like this is my state. And never in all of my upbringing was the fear of cougars brought to my attention to the extent that this committee is examining it today. That's the first point. I just would add on that point that to the extent that I was ever told anything about cougars as a little girl in the state of Oregon, it was simply that, you know, just like everything else out there, just, you know, use good sense, basically. And that if there were a problem cougar out there, more than likely it was going to let itself be known as a problem cougar long before it was going to attack a human. Secondly, as an environmental attorney, I've been trained extensively in logic, and just sitting here and listening to some of the comments today, I wanted to point out for you, because I think you're all intelligent people, the logical extreme of the arguments that have been made. Essentially, what people are saying is that cougars outrank humans on the food chain. Thank you. And that it is only a matter of time before they figure that out. And once they do, we're all fair game. And that the problem is attributable directly to the passage of Measure 18. And the solution is either to repeal Measure 18 or to somehow study cougars by killing them. I think you're all way too smart to take it that far. And that's all I had to say. Thank you.
Thank you.
I think I may be the only person.
And for the record, you are?
Barbara Wilson from Beaverton, and thank you for this opportunity to speak, and I will be very brief because we've had wonderful testimony here, and everyone is stolen my thunder. I do want to give the viewpoint of a person who lives in Beaverton in a cul-de-sac like Senator Ringo. Not quite as nice as yours, but...
my kids are doing everything possible to change that.
Everyone has said everything that I was going to say, so I will not reiterate. But I was struck by the young man from Seaside who said that the cougar rushed past him and he was left with a muddy, slick patch on his leg. Please note, the cougar did not bite him and haul him away. The cougar went past him. And the gentleman here from the county judge who listed 12 or 15 cougars in his area, please note, he did not say that one single one of those 15 or 20 cougars attacked anyone. I am a hiker. I'm in the woods as much as I can be, and in the last 40 years, I have had two cougar encounters where the cougar took one look at me and hissed and growled and screamed and then turned around and left. And he could have grabbed me. He could have eaten me. He didn't. I really don't think that's in the nature of a cougar. I would like to ask, what's the mortality rate per year on humans from cougars? Please reply. Please reply.
16 in the last 120 years.
In Oregon?
I don't know. That's what from Paul.
So that's my only repeat. And my second repeat, do not do this as far as consideration of Measure 18. You remember what happened to Death with Dignity when you sent it back to the voters? They jumped the vote from 52% to 62% because they were mad that the legislature sent this back. And the voters have spoken. They've spoken twice. Don't do this. Thank you very much. Oh, one question. I picked this up at the department downstairs, and it says Senate Bill 389 be engrossed. Is this old? Because it's still talking about black bears.
Yeah.
We're happy to talk about that. What we're looking at is the dash B6 amendments.
So I got the wrong one?
You just don't have the amendments. You just don't have the amendments.
You had the amendments earlier.
Okay.
Yeah. We were looking at this together.
Yeah. Well, We can get that straightened out. Any questions? Any questions for this panel? Okay. Well, thank you very much. I really appreciate your testimony. Just for the committee, I'm open for suggestions. Do you want to have the department, while they're here, come up and clarify any of these issues raised? Representative Burley's nodding yes.
And I've got one question.
Okay. Roy and Ron, why don't you come on up and...
And Mr. Chair, I'd like to have Representative Bogus propose an amendment that I want you to consider.
Okay. Senator Bates, what's your question?
Do you think you have sufficient information now in certain areas of Oregon what you think the proper size of cougar population should be? Or do you think you need more information before you can make those kinds of recommendations? I mean, for whole state, just for certain areas, considering the population, people, population of cougars, game herds, carrying capacity, and what the public thinks in those areas.
Chair Ringo, Senator Bates, we certainly have for some areas, for the record, once again, Ron Anglin, Wildlife Division Administrator, we do have information for certain areas that we could come up with what we feel is an appropriate density of cougars within those certain population areas. Typically what we do when we establish a management objective for an animal like that is we go through a public process and then it's adopted by our commission after they take in all sides of the debate and they make a decision then on what's the appropriate level.
I have two questions. One is, what's your response to the point that was made that hunters take large males
the mature cats, and it's the juveniles that are usually the problems.
Chair Ringo, if you look back in time at cougar harvest pre-measure 18 versus cougar harvest post-measure 18, there certainly were more adult males taken by hound hunters than there were adult females. It was skewed to adult males, but they did take a significant number of females, especially as we increased tag. Since measure 18, where it's a more random type of harvest with the people that are out there today, we see a more dispersed harvest of all age classes.
Okay. Let's say that there were to be hunting reinstituted in some sense of using dogs. Would that, because most of the animals that would be harvested would be the large males, the mature animals, would that type of hunting have a noticeable improvement on public safety?
Chair Ringo, I don't know that I could answer the question on whether that would have an impact on public safety or not. Certainly, if you want to reduce the population, you don't do that by reducing the male component of the population. You reduce the population by controlling the female component and reducing the reproductive capability.
Okay, so if we were to reinstitute hunting, would you expect that the harvested animals would be male and female then, of equal proportion?
Chair Ringo, probably initially you would see a large proportion of females being harvested as well as males, simply because people have the opportunity. I think through time you'd probably see some selection back towards large males, but it would be uncharted territory for us in a lot of ways.
I see. Just last, do you consider Paul Beyer, do you know of him? Is he a reputable scientist? Is he credible?
Chair Ringo, yes, we do. We actually send our publications to him for review. He's on our mailing list for peer review of our cougar plan, and we do seek his input.
Thank you. Yeah.
With respect to this bill, we're not saying that we shouldn't continue what we're doing in hunting. We're just saying adding one more tool, one more way to hunt with respect to those deals, and especially in areas where there are a lot of cougars. And I guess my real question has to do, when you take out a male or if you've got a female, it opens up that territory for a male. Currently, we have a lot of immature males coming into that fringe area between habitation of the cities and the others, because there is no territory out there. It's being filled up. Would you agree with that?
Chair Ringo, Representative Roblin, that certainly fits with what we have seen in our earlier research and fits within what our experiences were with cougar harvest back in the 80s.
And following up on Senator Bates' question about, you know, what might be a number statewide, if you, using the figures in your handout, where, and granted the research might be preliminary, but you said one of the findings is that you have seen cougar densities vary between 7 and 13 cougars per 100 square miles, and that the state of Oregon has, just in very rough figures, 96,000 square miles, and that includes all land base, including all nine counties that passed this measure, then if you use that range of figures from 7 to 13, you'd be looking at somewhere between 6,700 and 12,000 cougars in the state of Oregon. Now, again, that's all acres, so that means the city of Portland would have the same density as they would have out in Grand County or Wallowa County, which probably is not a realistic thing. So I think the number, but it goes back to my question earlier, it seems to me like we're very quickly approaching whatever number that number is. And I think we need to figure out how to deal with that. The other thing, too, I wanted to comment on was that, to me, the dogs is a very more effective way to hunt the cougars. As you pointed out in your testimony earlier, that with the current rules where a hunter can have two tags for a cougar, and I always get mine when I go out elk hunting, because if I shoot one, I want to be legal about it, and I'm not hunting cougars, but it's, you know, one's around. But if they're not filling their tags, what that says is that most of the hunting that goes on right now is just coincidental. I mean, not many people, certainly nobody that I'm aware of, goes out with a tag and starts walking through the woods with the sole intent of finding and shooting a cougar. So my point, Senator Starr and others, is that...
Senator who?
I'm sorry.
Hey, gee, Senator Courtney made that mistake a few days ago.
Senator Ringo, I'm very sorry.
I'm not a voting member, Senator. All that off the tree.
That's right, exactly.
We'll sacrifice him for the show.
What are you drinking down there?
But the point is that, you know, to me, for the department to be able to truly effectively manage the numbers, that's why I think we need to be able to use the dogs again in some capacity. I want to go back to the point earlier that we can do this now with, when you have a problem cat, but, you know, I'm just waiting for the day that that problem cat is because we've had a lethal attack. So last question I have, was there not an attack last hunting season?
Chair Ringo, Representative Burley, yes, we did have an individual over in the John Day area that appeared to have been attacked by a cat, and state police did investigate that. We had our own folks investigate that. And we have no reason to believe that he was not, in fact, attacked. But was it 100% conclusive? No. But it sure appears that he was.
Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Bates?
Yeah, I'd just like to, if I could, Mr. Chair, I'd like to follow up on the questioning I had started there. You indicated a few moments ago that you thought in certain areas of the state you might be able to have enough information to begin to determine the appropriate population of cougars in that area. I assume you have to go there and have public hearings, have discussions with the population, and whatever data you have to be applied to that area. If in fact you're able to do that and determine the size of the population that you thought was optimum for that area from the point of view of the perception of public safety and public safety, would you then be able to set the amount of harvest you want in the area, and would you be able to achieve that harvest if you didn't use dogs, or would you have to recourse to dogs in order to achieve that? Lots of questions in there.
Chair Ringo, Senator Bates, yes, we could set the harvest level and what it would take to bring it down based on what we estimate the population to be for that area versus what the commission approved population level would be, your management objective. We would attempt to use the legal hunting methods we have available to us today to bring it down to that population level. Based on our experience over the last 10 years, it is doubtful that we would be successful in achieving that.
Unless you use dogs.
Without the use of dogs, it is doubtful that we would be successful in achieving that.
My position is this. You know, I think that there are areas of our state where people are truly in fear of these animals. I personally, I think they're wonderful and magnificent animals, and I really enjoy when I do see one. It's rare, but I do. However, the fear from these animals in certain parts of our state is very real. It's affecting people's lives, how they spend their time outdoors, what they do when they're in their own backyard, and what they want to do with their lives. And the amendments before us, I don't think we offer a solution to that problem, whether we like to admit it or not. Opening up counties just to hunting on the basis of a vote for the county, I don't think is really the way to go. I'm not convinced we need another study either. I think it's time to have a discussion with the population of people in those areas that are most threatened or feel most threatened by this. Set some quotas there and do what you need to do to achieve those quotas. And that's I think, the direction we should be moving this in. Others will certainly disagree with that. There's people in my own community who feel very strongly opposed to what I've just said, and some will agree with it. But I think having an opportunity of that discussion at local levels where we probably need to go, that's just my opinion on this. I'm not convinced we need more studies. I'm also not convinced that simply opening up to a vote in a county is the best way to go either. And it'd be a careful, thoughtful discussion with the people in that area, the area that's being affected by it. Use the best data you've got, can make a decision what you need to do. I think there's more of not taking care of a single individual coup that's causing a problem, but a population that might be causing a problem, and managing that population for the multiple uses we want to put our resources to. There are people who like to hunt elk and deer in the state, and that's a declining population there because of what's going on, too. So I kind of spoke my piece. And
thanks for your comment,
and I'll be quiet now.
Senator Nelson.
I just have two comments. I mean, we're talking about the vote of the people, but you've all got this thing in your thing. I mean, the green is the counties that voted against Measure 18, and we don't have the majority of people in those counties that are doing it. So, I mean, whatever that's worth, I guess the people have spoken, it's the people in the urban areas that have spoken. Whatever, forever. That's good. The other thing is, I actually get mixed messages from the electorate. A couple of years ago, didn't they turn down steel jaw traps? Mm-hmm. The voters turned that down, and to me, that's a more inhumane, cruel way to capture. And I mean, you leave an animal sitting in a trap for hours and hours, and chews his leg off, whatever they do. I just, you know, yes. I'm getting mixed messages from the people. So. I think we have a very serious problem. I think we need to address it in some way. And
maybe we should transport cougars from the green states to the red states.
That's blue and red.
Chair?
Yes.
Representative Bocas can speak better to this amendment, but I'd like you to consider this Dash 7 amendment.
Okay. If you'll indulge me, Senator.
Yes.
I would point out to the question that Senator Bates raised, and I'll be happy to copy you. This is from earlier testimony in the other 5 or 6 hours we had. No, I guess we're at 9 or 10 now, Senator. I apologize. We presently set management goals in 6 areas across the state already. We're presently, in the last year, at 44% of those management goals. We already set a quota system, and we're already not achieving that goals. When in the multiple hearings on the House side, interestingly enough, to Senator Bates' question, there was originally a proposal to do a pilot study in 10 counties in which the Fish and Wildlife Department countered that we should do it in 5 counties, and almost identical to what Senator Bates has just proposed. We had that, but it didn't move forward. I would point out, having said all of that, that even in Paul Bauer's testimony in second page, paragraph 4, the theory that hunting cougars teaches them to avoid humans may be true, but lacks empirical support. And that's, of course, one of the issues we're talking about. Does this work? Does it not work? We put forth before coming here the Dash 7 amendment because to the members of the House, we're hearing lots of information. What the B7 does, I don't think it reaches what Senator Bates is addressing, but we see as a starting point of maybe getting there. Our original intent of B7, if you read it and look at it, was if the commission sets the quotas, which it already sets in law and it already publishes, and in the last 30 days of the season, and mind you, we said there's a 10-month season, but that's actually broken into 2 5-month seasons. It's separated. And so there'd be work there. But if they didn't meet the quota in those 6 regions, that then they could use dogs in the last 30 days of that season. I think I probably speak, and I know the chair will speak before me, I speak for most of the members. I mean, we're amenable, and the House members want to get something put forward that helps address this issue. Whether it's for sure the B7 amendment or whether we actually go back to something we spent hours on in House Bill 2759, which is addressing exactly as you're saying, going into 5 counties and doing something along exactly what you said and trying to progress. But I would close with that and pass out, Senator, if you'll indulge me in having entered into the record, this is actually a newspaper clipping for the Mill Owl Pioneer, and I'm not going to test the Mill Owl Pioneer, but the center column that is highlighted is from the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife webpage. And this is what they advise individuals when there's a cougar problem. And I'll just cover a couple points, and I think all of you can read it. Avoid feeding wildlife, especially deer, and keep livestock in enclosed sheds or barns at night when possible. That may be okay to do in the suburbs of Beaverton and the other places, but in my district, which is 5 rural counties, and in the rural area of Senator Bates, and I know out in Senator Nelson's area, putting livestock in at night is not an option. It goes on down to putting woven chain link fences around your playgrounds that your children play in. And so
we see it, I think, as a challenge, and we'd like to work with some of our esteemed colleagues across the aisle and come up with some sort of solution, or at least start of a solution this session. Madam Chair.
You did great. Thank you.
Any other last comments before we hit the gavel? Thank you very much. I want to thank everybody who testified for your testimony. We'll keep talking about this issue, and I want to thank everybody on the committee and we're adjourned.